This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Lovely Tuesday morning. 32 degrees today. Zero chance of precipitation. Zero. None. Nada. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you. Lots to get to. NFL season week one is done in the books. We'll get into that, of course. The Cleveland Indians are on what we call a heater, and last time there was a heater of 20 games, or at 19, they made a movie called Moneyball. So we'll see what happens. Mr. Kevin Cheveldayoff sat down with Bob McKenzie of TSN. We're going to hear from him and some of the thoughts he bestowed on the Bob father. Lots to get into, of course, in the hockey world, and we're going to tee up the phone lines. We're going to talk some Bombers, too, and we'll start with that right out of the gate. Ian Mendez, Paul Edmonds, Milt Stegall, and Jason Cole all going to join us today to talk some NHL, some CFL, and some NFL, and, of course, an hour of your phone calls coming up on the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9 o'clock. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Not too bad, man.
Tarps off day.
33 degrees or whatever it's going to go up to. I told the young fella that if he doesn't go swimming today, is grounded, and you know this is, you got to enjoy this. I'm looking ahead here. There's some teen days coming up, so whatever it is you like to do outside, take the tarps off, make love in the forest, whatever it is.
Well,
you go have at it today. This is the, like, this might be the last day of summer right here.
And if you see Troy near some trees, just get inside immediately. Apparently, I don't know. This might be a hot take, but I'm done with the heat.
That's what Trey said
yesterday.
Yeah,
he's a wise young man.
What is wrong with people? What is wrong with you?
Get it? I'm down low 20s, high teens, jeans and a t-shirt. I'm ready for that.
Give me that. Right? You got the Canadian tux going.
Brian Adams.
I didn't want to get into too much detail, but you're not wrong.
I want to talk about the Minnesota Vikings and ask you guys if they're for real, but I heard this conversation on the Boss Pizza Fan Line on the afternoon ride with Husser and Rick Ralph. And I thought, this is something we haven't touched on since the Bombers started winning games. It's the bye week for the Blue and Gold. Mike O'Shea, by the way, going into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. He'll hold a media call today at 9. We'll discuss that when that ceremony comes around as well. But are the Bombers Grey Cup contenders?
No doubt they're Grey Cup contenders. I think you have to, unless Calgary's so far ahead that it's a basic impossibility for anyone to challenge, and I don't think that's the case. Their defense is real good, but I do recall a time 3, 4, 5 years ago where Calgary, in a similar situation to this, way ahead of everyone, had a home game in the Western Final and lost the turnover battle 7-1 against the Saskatchewan Roughriders and lost the game. So, yeah, right now the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are the second or third best team in the CFL, you know, somewhere in that mix, maybe, and without any question whatsoever, like their biggest enemy from the heart of deep Saskatchewan would say they're at least the fourth best team in the CFL. I think when you look at Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, Edmonton, I think you got to look at those teams, and maybe, you know, I suppose someone might make the argument of Trevor Harris with being healthy in Ottawa could be, and the same sort of situation, right? You get in a one-game situation. If Ottawa were to make the Grey Cup, then they would have a chance as well. But no question whatsoever, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are Grey Cup contenders.
Yeah, I think when you're the second-best team in a league, I don't know how you can't be. I don't even care what the first-place team is doing. If you're number two, well, then you have a better chance than 95% of the other teams in your league. So, yeah, the Bombers are easily Grey Cup contenders, even though I think Calgary, it would take a gigantic upset to beat them at this point in time, even if it were the Bombers to be playing them, because it would be at McMahon Stadium, and even if it's at IGF, I think it would be a really big upset to beat the Stamps. But if you're the second-best team, then yeah, there's not much doubt about it. You're clearly one of the big contenders for the title.
That's interesting because that's last time we talked about this, I said, you know, I think they have a chance to win the Grey Cup, but if I was going to pick them against Calgary or Edmonton, or it came down to a game in to go to the Grey Cup, I wouldn't side with them, but it could happen. Now I'm leaning towards, like, does it change any more than what we last talked about it about a month and a half ago about whether they could actually go in and beat a Calgary or an Edmonton or...
Yeah, I think it's changed because BC's kind of fallen out of the radar in that conversation, and the Bombers have beat Edmonton as beat up as Edmonton is. I think you look at the Bomber offense, which at its best is damn good. Like, it's real good. The precision of that offense, the thinking, the decision-making, play-calling structure, misdirection, all those things that come into play here for the Bomber offense is right up there with the best in the CFL. And but then, of course, you talk about the defense, which is still a question mark. But when you compare it to maybe Edmonton, like the defensive front of Edmonton is pretty darn good. So I guess once Edmonton gets healthy on paper, you would look at them and probably give them a little bit of an advantage because you got Mike Riley and a Darius Bowman, and you just got a bunch of firepower and a little bit more punch in the mouth going on defensively there. But still, you've got a they're definitely an improved team from, let's say, a month ago, as the offense continues to get sort of more honed and sculptured. But the defense, it's not improving at the rate anyone hopes. But the D line is sort of asserted itself over the last month, and of course the back end's still a work in progress. But I think no doubt they're better than they were a month ago.
And I would say they'd be slight betting favorites against both Edmonton and Saskatchewan at this point in time. They'd be big underdogs against Calgary, but when you look at the other teams in the West, as of right now, they performed better than those two clubs. And, you know, the Bombers' defense isn't – they're just flat-out not good right now. Like, that's the reality of the situation. But even if they were to go into Calgary for a Western final, their defense – they're kind of suited for an upset in a way because what they do best is create pressure with their front four on the quarterback, and they turn the ball over. They've done it better than any team over 2 years. So if you can win the turnover battle heavily and get pressure on whatever quarterback you're going up against, you got a chance with the way the Bombers' offense is playing. So
and Bo Levi's looked very human this
ordinary,
year. Ordinary,
right?
Yeah. Like, he's only, I think, 16 touchdowns, 8 interceptions sort of thing. So you kind of mix those two things together, and maybe on the right day with just the right barometric pressure, it might all come together for some sort of an upset.
Well, we'll ask that on the Boss Pizza fan line at 8-3 and in a bye week. If you think the Grey Cup championship could come to Winnipeg, do you find the Winnipeg Blue Bombers a Grey Cup contender, and has your mind changed over the last month and a half? This is the Big Show on TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca. NFL Week 1 wrapped up last night, gentlemen, and we'll switch to if you think the Minnesota Vikings are a Super Bowl contender. A lot's to be said about their defense. Sam Bradford looked really good last night. Dalvin Cook, their running back, their rookie running back, just ironically, had a really good game in his first NFL regular season start compared to Adrian Peterson, who came back to town with the New Orleans Saints. They win 29-19. It's only one game, but does Minnesota vault into the Super Bowl contender conversation?
Not for me yet. As good as their defense is, you really need to remember, if you're a Vikings fan, of the defensive force that they were up against last night in the New Orleans Saints, which... they are absolutely god-awful. So you just can't measure even all the raving of the O-line last night and five new guys coming together and all the rest of it. And they had a nice game, but you've got to have a different measuring stick than the New Orleans Saints, the defense of the Saints. If you're going to start talking, are they a Super Bowl threat or, you know, is that a realistic dream? The defense looks dang good. Sam Bradford looked fantastic last night. Throwing for darn near 350, but when it's the Saints on the other side of the line of scrimmage, boys, I've got to pump the brakes a little bit. The one thing, I found it sad last night watching Adrian Peterson, man.
Oh.
I remember Bob Cameron talking to me. You know, he played 23 years, and he said to me one time, sort of quietly, as we were traveling to a game, one of the stadiums on the bus, he looked in and said to me, had an understanding and was a real good teacher for me to have good perspective in playing, and said he was concerned about becoming a mascot for the team, where you're in really good standing with management. All the guys on the team love you, and so you're granted some extra time because of that, because you have really good relationships, and of course you have been successful in the past. But if you stay too long, even if you're welcomed by the coaches, management, and the players still, and you're there simply because of what you've done in the past and that sort of thing, that you're there but you don't really feel like maybe you should be there and that sort of thing, and sort of being granted the opportunity instead of maybe it being really well-deserved, and just seeing how reduced Adrian Peterson is from the brilliance of what he was a handful of years ago, it's a sad end, huh? Like it's just something doesn't feel right about watching him out there. And his last year in Minnesota, the remarkable low carry or yards per carry and all the rest of it, and just there's no pop in what he brings to the field anymore, and there's something sad about it.
You know what's sad is I still to this day have no idea why he signed in New Orleans.
Yeah, well, that's the
I don't like. There's the Giants that need a running back. I could go on and on. That is an offense that even if you are Mr. Mark Ingram, the starting running back, you're just not going to be that involved. And I don't understand why you're going to join a Mark Ingram and a rookie running back and hope to get more than six carries a game. It was all over Twitter last night. I was watching the game. When he looked at Sean Payton, yep, and he ended the game with only six carries, and Sean Payton turned and looked at him and turned and walked away, I was just like, I felt bad for him, Troy, right up until that point. Then I was like, you chose this. Yeah. Like, what are you thinking? I still have no clue why he went to New Orleans.
Me and my brother talk about that all the time. What, as an agent, what was the sales pitch there? Honestly.
Like, it had to be the $3 million
guarantee. You can go play with the Giants and make some solid dough, and you'll be the number one back on a playoff contender. Or, hey, why not New Orleans, where you get five carries a game? Oh, that sounds perfect. Like, it's something that made no sense then and still won't now, and they're already talking about, well, maybe the Saints need to try and trade him. Like, half into the in the second quarter, you had Peterson already losing his mind on the side. Like, it looks like it's just a complete disaster in New Orleans before the season really has gotten underway. But the Vikings I know it's the Saints, but they still look damn impressive. And I know New Orleans' defense isn't much, but Sam Bradford still made some real impressive throws. Whether or not you think they're not talented enough, it wasn't check down Sam last night. He was making some pretty nice dart throws out to the sidelines to Diggs and Thielen all game long. So you might have something there. You never know.
Well, John Gruden said during the broadcast that he is the check down quarterback, and that's a horrible rap for him. He can throw, and he can throw long, and he can do all kinds of throws. And then in the postgame show, Steve Young said, I don't care what the numbers are. That is an outstanding quarterback performance, the way he managed that game, got first downs, drove the field, took time off the clock. And you add in the defense, and that's why I'm wondering. We all know the Green Bays. We all know the New Englands. We all know everybody that's favored to win this year. And I'm wondering if this quietly vaults them in. We all knew they would have a great defense. But Dalvin Cook looks good. The receivers look good. And Sam Bradford looked real good.
Now, after that game, the Broncos and the Chargers get ramped up, and of course that's a late game. Watch a little bit, watch the highlights this morning. But as I'm getting ready for bed and getting all that stuff sort of ready, guys, it's on, the TV's on, and I hear a voice. I'm like, is that a woman? And I go and I stand and I'm listening, and I'm like, that is the first time in my life I've ever heard a woman call a football game. And I thought her name was Beth Mowins, and with Rex Ryan, of course. And guys, I thought that was really, really cool. And just and to have the conversation with Trey, I said, Trey, do you hear that? That's a woman calling the game. Have you ever heard that? And he goes, no, Dad. And we got into that whole conversation. What a neat conversation to have with him to explain how ridiculous it's been to never have heard a woman's voice during a football game.
And we're going to touch on that in a segment still in this hour coming up. We have to break, though, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the heater the Cleveland Indians are on. And Kevin Cheveldayoff sat down with TSN's Bob McKenzie. We'll have those clips at the bottom of the hour. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrity. On September 22nd and 23rd, the money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, and state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, simply visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you. 22 minutes past the hour. Going to be a gorgeous day out. Adrian Peterson, after the Saints and Vikings game, when asked about the exchange with Sean Payton, said, "We'll keep that confidential."
Could read his lips. So he said, "We need to run the ball up there, Apple."
Keep it confidential to me means I made a big mistake signing her.
And the look he gave Bradford after when they sent him out to try and convert on that third and goal or whatever it was, and he or maybe it was fourth and goal, and yeah, I think it was fourth and goal, and they run him out and they try and get him out into the flat, and he's covered, and he creates no separation. The look he gave, Breeze, right, after thinking that Breeze should have tried to stuff it into some tiny little window there was remarkable to me. It was like, dude, you're looking at Drew Breeze. Like, man, you got to throw me the ball when you create zero separation. Come on, man.
The whole, it was clear to me, to me, in my mind anyways, that he was sitting there going, like, I'm better than Mark Ingram, and I just walked into this team and should get all the snaps and all the starts, and I'm Adrian Peterson.
A guy just totally out of touch with the reality of father time and
even
else, right?
But what are you doing if you're the Saints too? Why you need so much more help? Literally everywhere else on your roster. Mark Ingram, I don't think people know this, was the NFL leader in yards per carry last year. If you were to look at the Saints and you said, what are the issues this team does not have? Quarterback, running back, and receiver. And what did they do in the offseason? They signed Ted Ginn and they signed Adrian Peterson. And people wonder why every year, despite Breeze throwing for over 5,000 yards, why they go 7-9.
It's bizarre. Last night, the Cleveland Indians pounded the Detroit Tigers 11-0 to move closer to the record that has stood for 101 years. And that is winning baseball games consecutively. It was the third best winning streak since 1947, and it's the first time they're knocking on the 20-win game in a row record since the 2002 Oakland Athletics, which was the team in the film Moneyball. And we're seeing that clip all the time. When was it Hattiger, the catcher who came up? And
Scott Hatterberg.
Hatterberg.
Chris Pratt.
Crushed the ball, and that famous scene from Moneyball where they say, I've never played first base before. And he said, it's real easy. Tell him it's not easy at all. But 19 in a row, and the Cleveland Indians, not so quietly because we were talking about this the past 2 weeks, but just on a real heater, do you cheer for this? Do you hope that they win as many games in a row as possible?
In 19 wins in a row, they got 100-run diff during that 19-game stretch. They've only allowed 32 runs during those 19 games that have hit 38 home runs. So what they're doing is remarkable. And, yeah, I suppose I'm cheering for them to chase history. But this might upset you, Jim, that I'm going to bring this up. But what bothers – like, the constant – I just – even watching Jay and Dan this morning, I can't – the whole team bugs me, obviously. The Wahoo is ridiculous. But the number of broadcasters that will – say Indians to me is just bothers the hell out of me. I don't understand. Like, if their team were the Negroes, the Cleveland Negroes, how bizarre does that sound? And yet, for us as broadcasters to not recognize how ridiculous the name is and refuse to say it and just keep regurgitating out there, this win streak, because of how much more they're in the news to me, I hear it over and over again. I see Wahoo nonstop, and both those things just end up bugging me an immense amount.
So if it wasn't Cleveland, would you still be cheering for the 19 wins in a row?
Yeah, I think I'd cheer for history. And even
like, you hope
Cleveland,
they win 30 in a row
that
down the stretch here? Is this something you're watching?
Yes, absolutely. It's sort of there's a double whammy going on in the bigs right now, right? You got Cleveland ripping off 19, and you got the Dodgers at 11 straight.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. What are you watching more?
I'm always been a Dodgers fan a little bit, and I'm kind of watching the Dodgers thing going, are you guys going to pull out of this nosedive or what?
Yeah, I might lean towards the train. No, Cleveland plays earlier in the night. I'll go with Cleveland. And it's a bit different, too, than, like, Oakland was kind of this underdog, feel-good story, team nobody believed in type thing.
No
major Everybody,
stars.
How many people picked Cleveland to win the AL and go to the World Series? Right? Like, it almost feels like you're watching a team... Real, like kind of like the Rockies did a few years, about like 15 years ago, when they went to the World Series against Boston and they won like 20 of 22 and then swept their way into the World Series.
Yeah.
Like it feels like it's a juggernaut at its peak right now, and it doesn't feel like it's going to slow down anytime soon.
And how much fun is watching Francisco Lindor?
Lindor and Jose Ramirez, who's just like, people don't realize when we talk about all the big hitters in the game and stuff, that he leads the majors in extra base hits last year, this year. It's just, that's my thing with them. The thing I like about this winning streak is they're angry over last year in the World Series. Like, they went to Game 7 with the Cubs, didn't win. There's no hangover here. In fact, it's probably driving them right now. I do check in every night to see if they continue the win streak. Kevin Cheveldayoff sat down with TSN's Bob McKenzie. We'll hear those comments next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of the sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. You can nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them soon. The Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. We're going to get into the thoughts on the first female broadcasting a nationally televised NFL game last night. Mr. Ian Mendez is going to join us in the next hour from TSN 1200 in Ottawa. Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Jets, back from the Young Stars Tournament at 7:30. We have your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas in the next hour as well. It's 33 minutes past the hour, going to be 32 degrees today and sunny. Looks to be the last time we touch 30s, which makes Brandon Rewicki very happy. He apparently wants snow tomorrow. The rest of us are going to enjoy tarp coming off today. You going to mow the lawn one last time?
I did last night. It was,
you did, eh?
I took down the Christmas lights.
Why? You're months away.
Well, the plastic is all getting petrified, and I'm going to change the color thing up. So, yeah, decided to do all that last night.
Wow. Making the most of it.
There's a break here between soccer seasons, right? Outdoors done now for the young fella. We're waiting on indoor to get going. So having all this spare time at night is like, holy cow, this is, you know, sitting by the TV and doing fun stuff.
How long's Westwood going to leave those Christmas lights up? He needs that break in the soccer season. That's a very Christmassy thing when to do it. Mr. Kevin Cheveldayoff was sitting down, of course, back from the Young Stars Tournament. First of all, they beat the Flames Young Stars yesterday 3-1. Sounded like a dominant game for the Jets, even though they went down earlier in the first period, 1-0, and then came back with three goals. Jansen Harkins with a couple of helpers. Who had the two goals again? It was...
Yeah, Harkins scored
twice.
Yeah,
Harkins had the two goals, sorry. Logan Stanley had an assist. And, I mean, there wasn't... This lineup, when I was listening and watching the games, it just... You know, most of those guys that we usually look for were part of those 15 that were on the ice back here at the Bell MTS Ice Pucks prior to camp. But we'll talk more about that with Paul Edmonds. Mr. Kevin Cheveldayoff returned as well. And while he was there, he sat down with TSN's Bob McKenzie. And we ran that comment yesterday on TSN 1040 in Vancouver where they said, you know, his patience paid off for you. And he said, well, I wouldn't say I was all that patient. And, you know, sometimes you want to do stuff and you're impatient, but it just isn't there. So here's Kevin Cheveldayoff sitting down with TSN's very own Bob McKenzie on keeping patient with his process.
You know, certainly for us, you know, again, there's no greater pressures than we put on ourselves. But we understand the fans and I live there. I'm there every day. And it's a great group of people. It's a passionate hockey market. They understand the game, which I think is really, you know, really important in the process that we've gone through and what we've had to do. I think maybe a lesser educated market might not have understood, you know, how you go about acquiring, you know, a Line A and Ehlers, a Kyle Connor, and again, even a player like Kyle Connor, who we drafted in the mid first round. These things take time. Mark Scheifele, as a high pick, took time for us to develop, and now they're seeing, you know, the type of player and the reason why we chose to draft them, not only with the skill but the character. And we do believe that when it does come together, it's going to be a real formidable force. And there's lots of things that come into play all the time. We're in the National Hockey League with a salary cap, which there's free agency that comes into play. The younger you start a player at 18 or 19, the quicker he gets to free agency. So these are all things that you have to weigh through the whole time, and that's what we've done in the years that we've taken over. But we understand that it's an exciting time. We understand that it's an important time, and we're ready to hit the ground running.
That it doesn't change my mind about anything. I mean, it's just what they plan to do from the start, in my mind. It just, now that it's coming to fruition a little bit, on paper at least, does your mind change at all about the direction or the focus or what they've been doing with this whole process? Because the thing about looking at this lineup on paper right now is, you know, now it's paying off. But, you know, year three, year four, those are the hard, lean years when you're sitting there and you know, do you want to do something? Can you do something? Do you want to? I mean, it's not easy in this business to just sit and stand pat and wait for this to come to fruition.
Yeah, I've always been cool with the timeline here. And I know it was sort of misconstrued or something that just sort of rolled out of control here. But when we first started the show, I suggested that a five-year window was a fair amount of time before he can really, when they first arrived, a five-year window was a fair amount of time before he could really evaluate the job that Kevin Cheveldayoff did. And a lot of people sort of, as time went on and, you know, the way things work in conversation and such, it was just sort of twisted around to that. The Jets themselves had this five-year window sort of that they had created. But it was on the show that we suggested it. And I think you look back and it is absolutely the truth, isn't it? What he says, how do you get talent like Patrick Laine? You don't get it unless you draft it. And sure, there's the Datsyuks and the guys that you can unearth at whatever round and all the rest of it. But when you look at the fact and the impact of just their first overall pick each year, and you go Scheifele, Trouba, Morrissey, to Ehlers, to Connor, who are still waiting, and then, of course, when you're talking about Patrick Laine, it is really quite remarkable the impact their first pick each season, what it's brought to the team here. And it's been slow and steady, something they came out of the gate saying, and it's still in that process to some degree, but this is the first year now coming into camp where you look at their roster, you look at their depth chart, and there's no apparent weakness.
Yeah, that is how it is, and I've been kind of laughing because I've been reading a couple articles since they extended Chevy and Maurice, and people are kind of poo-pooing Chevy's work at the draft, saying, "Well, hey, look, you're supposed to hit on your first rounders." Yeah, you're supposed to. How many teams do it? Mm-hmm. Right? Show me the team that's had that much success picking in the first round.
Yeah.
Right? And there's a lot of teams that do it a lot higher up in the draft that aren't able to get impact players or even, you know, solid NHLers at the very least. But I don't think fans really care about the process anymore. Like, maybe the process has been sound up until this point, but it's gotten to the point where it's almost purely results-based. Like, I don't think, like, the Jets could have the worst Corsi in the league and a shooting percentage way above average, and it's screw process. It's results time.
Well,
like,
that's where we are now, though, right?
Yeah.
In the timeline itself, that's where mm-hmm. we've arrived, right?
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, the time for process is over, mm-hmm. which is, you know, maybe that's part of the process in a roundabout way, right?
Yeah.
But this is a year where moral victories are non-existent. Right, it's all about what you actually do out there when it comes to the standings moving on forward.
Yeah, to me, I've read those articles too, and to me, I'll harken back to you know, last year when the national media started harping on this team, and some, you know, Jets fans on Twitter would let me know that, you know, that's the problem with Winnipeg media. You're not hard on this team and all this. And I always responded to them. The national media also had this team making the playoffs last year, and none of us here did. Like, there is a disconnect if you cover the team locally and the one nationally. And I'm not saying that they don't know what they're talking about or anything like that. I'm not going to that degree. But they don't see the day-to-day of it. They don't see the – just the same as we sit here and talk about the Leafs, but we don't see the day-to-day of that and what's going on with it as well. So, and I read those articles, and to me it's two different things. If you want to talk results, by all means, let's talk results, get into the lack of everything on the – but you can't have one without the other. And when I read this stuff about rewarding mediocrity and everything like that, well, if you're talking about the draft, there's nothing mediocre about what the Jets have done. Yep. And Jansen Harkins is one of those people that down the road it's going to pay off. But it's so immediate. Like, you look at this roster for the Young Stars tournament just as a whole and see how it's changed from there's no Nick Ehlers there, there's no Kyle Connor there, there's no, because these guys have come along, and I think the organization is finally deep enough where they can send a roster of young stars. They can have 15 guys on the ice working on stuff that could propel them at camp, and you have your main roster. Mm-hmm. We've never even seen that.
Yeah, no.
We're used to watching the Young Stars tournament to see a guy who literally could make the team this year, and we're not seeing that again this year. So, other than Tucker Poolman. So it's interesting to me, the whole process and the viewpoint of locally, nationally, everything else that goes in and around this team. We're on the Big Show, and it's TSN 1290. We're discussing Kevin Cheveldayoff's conversation with TSN's very own Bob McKenzie. And here's Cheveldayoff talking with Bob on how the Jets can improve.
Well, you know, again, 7 points out. We had 40 wins. I think Nashville had 41. You know, again, if you look at those 7 points, if there's a way that you can... And you hate to look at it in these ways, but if you can take a game to overtime, if you can, you know, maybe have one less goal scored against you, one less, you know, penalty kill that you have to deal with, like the discipline, those kind of things that's important to us. We talk about it, we know it. Our penalty kill has to be better. Special teams have to be better. If we were at the top of the game in both of those aspects and finished where we finished, then you might be wondering, okay, what else can you do? Because 5-on-5 is a very difficult thing to really come into play. But we score enough 5-on-5. We need, you know, if we can score more on the power play, we can give up less on the penalty kill. These are all things that can help propel us, to those ever 7 or 9 or 10 or 12 extra points.
It is amazing all of the little things that come into play and the small gaps that exist in the measurement of them that you sort of heap on one another. And it can come from 8, 10, 12 different areas or stats, and that's the difference between making the playoff line or not. Like, we talked last year about how few it was, like 8 to 10 saves additional from Connor Hellebuck and keeping the puck out of his net, and that throws him up to a 9-15 sort of thing. You're talking about if you increase your penalty kill by a mere 4%, which doesn't sound like much, but that creates all kinds of separation. That throws you into above average in the NHL for penalty kill. Like, all those, the difference between winning and losing is so slight. And when you're talking percentages and just what needs to be done, but they all come into play, and it is absolutely the separation between winning and losing. And he's just exactly what he's saying there is exactly true.
Yeah, and you know, he kind of, I guess, lessened the impact of the overtime games, but that's what you do to make the playoffs in the NHL
that's
nowadays.
Right.
It sounds like, well, hey, all the Jets had to do is get to overtime 5 or 6 more times. Well, that's 5 or 6 or 7 more goals that you're giving up a game, or your 7 or 6 goals you're giving up fewer a game. Like, it sounds like it's a little difference, but it's pretty major. And that, to me, is the main difference between playoff teams and non-playoff teams. Playoff teams find a way to get it to OT, and you turn 0 points into 1 or 2, and you do that. Like, that's how the Maple Leafs made the playoffs last year. I think they led the league in overtime shootout
15
losses.
15 losses, yeah.
But they also, while they picked up that extra point, also won a couple of games that maybe they shouldn't have. So that's,
even Nashville had 5 more overtime losses than the Jets. There's another 5 points.
So
right?
You're talking about being 8 or 9 goals better kind of overall. Doesn't sound like a lot, but that could potentially be 8, 9, 10, 12 points. Like, you can see how it starts to kind of stockpile pretty quickly.
Here's Cheveldayoff on goaltending.
So I think we have to take a step back, and if we really, you know, probably wanted to, in retrospect, play the interviews that we did at this point in time last year, we said, look, this is the decision that we're going to make. You know, Connor Hellebuck is going to be put into this, is going to be given this opportunity, because a year from now, fast forward a year to this point, if he didn't have that, he would be a goalie that would require waivers. He would have been someone that probably would have torn up the American Hockey League, and we all would have been sitting here saying, you know, he's the de facto number one. So we knew what we were getting into going into last year with respect to putting in a young goaltender, which is a very, very difficult position to just give someone that opportunity, but he's learned from it. He's grown from it. I think he's going to be stronger. Steve Mason is a bona fide number one. He's had that opportunity to carry it. He's had his ups and downs in his career. And but again, like when we signed him, when we talked and we told him, this is your job. You're here to help us win. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it is going to be about winning. It is going to be, you know, whatever situation, whatever goaltender can push each other. And that competition will be great. But, you know, obviously, Steve Mason is a number one.
With Mason as number one, presumably Hellebuck is number two, where does that leave Michael Hutchinson? He's 27 years old now. He needs waivers to go down.
Yeah.
Is a trade a possibility? Is risking putting him down and getting him to the Moose for the depth option? Are these all possibilities?
Well, you know, again, for his career, I don't really talk about trades too much, but if there's a trade out there, you know, certainly we would look at it. He's a fantastic person. We don't make the playoffs the 1 year that he doesn't have his 20 wins. You know, both him and Andre Pavlik, played and played a lot, and Hutch had 20 wins. So, again, it's a tough situation. When we made this decision to sign another goaltender, we knew there was a glut, but we feel we have a tremendous up-and-coming young goaltender in Eric Comrie that we want to make sure gets games and does play, and we have a lot of confidence with him in our organization. So if there's a possible trade out there, I'll certainly look at it. But you know, at this point in time, you just can't see how it all unfolds yet.
That's interesting about the Hutchinson thing, because they have the depth now. So if something's there, and I think even if it was there 2-3 years ago, maybe not 3 years ago, but they might have looked at it. But now it's to the point where if we can improve our team, we have some depth and calm. Clearly, if somebody gets injured, I think it's going to be Comrie who gets the call if they're confident enough to deal Michael Hutchinson.
Yeah, and Hutch is still a guy, when you're talking career numbers, that has some decent numbers. So it will be interesting what they do. And I thought it was cool when he said he comments on the character of Michael Hutchinson, who is absolutely top shelf, and seeing him at a number of events and just hearing Mark Scheifele speak of him as well. He is truly a top shelf guy. So he's a guy that you hope has enjoys some level of success, but just a rough year last year for Hutchinson. Hopefully he has the opportunity somewhere, somehow, to sort of reestablish himself in the NHL.
We'll hear more from Kevin Cheveldayoff's conversation with Bob McKenzie throughout the program today here, but up next, we'll talk about history being made on an NFL broadcast last night on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki, weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a part of the iHeartRadio network. Download the iHeartRadio app and listen to us on all your favorite devices, or go to the Perfect Four section and choose from hundreds of channels to suit any mood or music taste. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app and get streaming. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you. 53 minutes past the hour, almost to the Royal Sports Power Hour here on The Big Show, TSN 1290, and we touched on it earlier in the show. Troy Westwood did anyways. Beth Mowins becomes the first woman to call a nationally televised NFL game last night, as she called the Monday Nighter on ESPN between the Denver Broncos and the San Diego Chargers, and I thought she was really, really good.
She was really good, and it was, I did not know coming into the game that she was doing this, and the game was just on, and I'm kind of doing some stuff, getting ready for bed, and it made me stop. It stopped me in my tracks. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's a lady. And Trey is on the bed watching the game as well, and then the conversation with him was really cool. But just, for me, as a guy who's like or a person, like most everyone listening here that's been paying attention to sports their entire lifetime, that is the first time in my life I've ever heard a woman call a football game. And I thought it's about damn time. And she did a fantastic job. And Trey said, Trey didn't understand it because he said, Daddy, girls play football, right? I'm like, yeah, they play football. They haven't always played football, but I don't know how long ago it started. Maybe 10, 15 years ago. I'm just kind of guessing. But there's all kinds of women's teams. There's a world championship, all the rest of it. So I said to Trey, there's no reason in the world. Like, girls can call boys football. Boys can call girls football. It's all football, man. And she, I agree with you guys. I thought she did a fantastic job. And even, like, she sounded more comfortable and better than Rex Ryan did. I thought she was really good.
Yeah, that's the surprise. You know, the fact that she had to carry in the thin Denver air Rex Ryan and wasn't out of breath by the third quarter. That was a hell of a feat. I don't know if I watched a fair amount of college football, and they have a few women calling the games there. I don't know if she was. I can't remember off the top of my head if she was one of them before, but I had the same reaction when I heard that. You just kind of jarring right away, but. She was outstanding. There's no other way to put it. We talked about, you know, Tony Romo being great on Sunday, but, you know, Beth was, she was like, I have no problem listening to that every Sunday, every Monday, right? I mean, she got excited at the perfect times, was knowledgeable, tried to kind of coax Rex Ryan into, you know, unveiling what he does best, which is knowledge of the defense, and he kind of struggled with that, but yeah, she was really, really impressive.
Yeah, it's Rex Ryan's first game, so this isn't a hard – I know a lot of people make fun of it, but it's not an easy thing to do to broadcast, and it's not an easy thing to do play-by-play in color. It takes some time, so I'll give Rex Ryan some more time, but I will say he was awful last night. And
Especially comparing him to, say, Tony Romo.
Well, yeah, right. And I mean, I know what they're doing. He's a name. He's an outlandish character, and he says bold things. In my experience in this industry, when you grab people like that and put them on a mic, that's when they don't say these things because they're out of their environment, they're not relaxed, and they can't, you know, sit down and have a conversation with it. So we'll see if he gets better. I didn't think he was very good, but I thought Beth Mowins was very good. I really liked her delivery. I really liked her pacing of the game, and it stood out to me. Now, should we talk about the sideline guy? What's his name?
Sergio Dip.
So what's the story? The guy or the person who was supposed to be the sideline reporter fell ill.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to the original, but he actually works with ESPN Deportes, and he speaks Spanish. If you go to his Twitter page, it's entirely in Spanish. So English, I think it would be similar to most Canadians having to do a French language broadcast. Like he speaks English better than most Canadians speak French, but like picture any of us trying to do a hit on the sidelines, all in French, all kind of thrown together at the last second.
And he embraced it, which was really good, because he then tweeted out after he did a sideline hit, and it wasn't very smooth, it wasn't very good. And you could clearly tell he was struggling with the language, what he was trying to say in English. And then he embraced it by tweeting out as he gained follower after follower and people were going crazy. Even my cousin in Whitehorse, UConn, texted me and said, what is going on Monday Night Football right now? But he embraced it with tweeting out a picture of Google with the title line and how to deal with instant fame because he knew he was getting vilified for it. So he had fun with it. But yes, congratulations to Beth Mowins, the first woman to call a nationally televised NFL game, and I thought it sounded pretty good. And then there was Rex Ryan. We'll take a break. When we come back, Ian Mendez joins us on the Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Knott Auto Corp present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Knott Auto Corp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you and five buddies up from a starting destination, drive you to the game, and when it's done, we'll take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes six tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter to win now at TSN1290.ca. Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki with you. On the Royal Sports Power Hour of the Big Show, TSN 1290, Paul Edmonds, voice of your Winnipeg Jets right here on TSN 1290, going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Your NHL news and notes are going to come, and we will qualify another person for the Hockey Nights in Vegas qualifier, Ryan Williams, our first grand prize winner yesterday. Really? Tweeted at us, very excited, pumped, tweeted like later in the afternoon. You could tell he was just sitting around going, this is outstanding.
I was giggling all afternoon yesterday just thinking about the fact that his fiance can't come because she's scared of flying, and like that whole conversation and how it all went down, just giggling away to myself.
He hashtagged made for Vegas when he tweeted. That's all it said. So Ryan joined us yesterday on the program. He's one of five grand prize winners that will be off to Vegas to see the Jets and the Golden Knights at T-Mobile Arena on November 10th. And if you missed the conversation yesterday on the show, he said, well, my his fiance, right? His fiance is afraid of flying. So she said, I don't think I will go. So now the hunt begins to find somebody that would.
It'll be tough.
Be bored enough to join him on this extravagant trip. We'll qualify somebody in our next segment. Ian Mendez from TSN 1200 in Ottawa joins us now. Ian, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Doing well, thank you very much. We were just talking about Monday Night Football and Beth Mowins becoming the first female to broadcast a nationally televised NFL game. We thought she did very good, at least better than Rex Ryan.
Yeah, boy, Rex Ryan was a little bit awkward, I thought, at times. Last night, and I thought it was great. You know what? I think the year 2017, that it's taken this long to get a female voice into the play-by-play booth, it's a little bit sad that it's taken this long, but it's great. I thought she handled herself really well. And listen, you're going to always get the critics, and I think, unfortunately, for Beth and for all female broadcasters, they're unfortunately held to a higher standard where if they mess up or they make a mistake, the sort of insinuation is, well, they don't know sports or they're not as smart as their male counterparts. Whereas if a male sort of has a stumble or messes up, it's kind of like, okay, well, I don't really necessarily like his play call. And I thought Beth did great. I really did. And I think, you know, you'd like to think that this opens the door for other female voices in the booth. And you've seen it in the National Hockey League. I think Cassie Campbell's done a great job when she's been asked to be a game analyst in the National Hockey League. And I think I understand it's going to take maybe 10 or 15 years for people to get used to this concept. And what I'm hoping is in 10 or 15 years, it's not even a conversation when there's a female in the broadcast booth in major sports in North America.
I saw the scar on the footage on SportsCenter in Eric Carlson out in a golf course and in no hurry to get the skates back on. Your take on that whole story?
Well, for the first time yesterday when he spoke to us at the before the Sens golf tournament, he said, I'll come back whether that's in October or November. I'm going to make sure I'm 100% healthy. And I think that was a real eye-opener for us when he brought up the fact that maybe he might miss the first month of the season. And you're thinking to yourself, uh-oh, like, if this is a playoff bubble team to begin with, and a lot of people think that they are, even though they went to the seventh game of the Eastern Conference final last year, I think there's a lot of people that still have some question marks on Ottawa and think, okay, well, maybe at best they're a wild card team. Well, if that's the case, if you're going to take away their best player for a month of the season, that could seriously impact their playoff chances. I think I looked at it. Ottawa plays 12 games in the month of October, and then they play a couple of games before they go out to Sweden to play against the Avalanche. And I would think that that's a realistic target return in Carlson's mind, that he wants to make sure he gets to go back home and play in Sweden. So that's the 15th and 16th games of the season. So think about that. If Ottawa is missing Eric Carlson for 15 games, it's not quite a quarter of the season, but pretty darn close. Boy, that could significantly impact this team's chances to make the playoffs, and they might be out of it if they can't hold their head above water in October. They might be out of it come Christmas time.
Yeah, that is real interesting news that spread across the National Hockey League yesterday. What are your thoughts on the moves and what's taken place with the Ottawa Senators over this offseason as we head into training camp?
Well, it's been a pretty quiet offseason, to be honest with you. I mean, I think the biggest piece of news, and it was really unrelated to an actual transaction where they got something back in return, was losing Mark Lafont in the expansion draft. I think that's a huge hole for this team. That's Eric Carlson's regular defense partner. So just to sort of add to what I was just talking about, imagine the first month of the season, Ottawa may be completely without its top D pairing from a year ago in Lafont and Carlson, if Carlson can't play. That's a pretty big hole to cover. And I think there's a lot of teams that would suffer if their top two defensemen from a year ago weren't in the lineup. So that, to me, is going to be the biggest question mark on this team. They didn't really do anything in the offseason in terms of adding any pieces. So can this young kid, Thomas Chabot, who I think was really impressive at the World Junior tournament when he suited up for Canada, can he come in and become a regular in the National Hockey League? I think that might be a little asking a little bit too much of a guy that's only 20 years old, roughly, to come in and play big minutes in the NHL, but that's what they might need in the early part of the season.
Ian, a fascinating move here by the Sens, and typically in marketing, when you're trying to appeal to more people or create a higher level of demand for your tickets, you typically think expansion, aggression in the market, trying to accumulate more of a fan base. Not very often. I don't know if I've ever seen an organization reduce the seating capacity, and in this case by the Sens, by 1,500 seats at the Canadian Tire Center. Quite an interesting move to hope to increase interest or value of tickets.
Yeah, it is. The way it was explained to us last week was they said that they wanted to kind of, quote, right-size the building for this market, make it sort of retrofit it to sort of adapt to the needs. I know in Winnipeg has the smallest rink of the National Hockey League, but the feeling is in Winnipeg, if you expanded that rink by a couple thousand, you would think that there'd be enough people, right, that there's enough of a demand to go in and see Jets games, whereas here in Ottawa, the capacity is just a shade under 19,000, and what they're saying is we need to be at 17,000. 17,000 is our sweet spot, and I think what happened last year, and I don't blame people across the country that were kind of rolling their eyeballs saying, are you kidding me? Because there was a couple of playoff games that they didn't quite sell out. Now, here's the catch, because I think it's so counterintuitive to think that in Canada, a Canadian hockey team couldn't sell out a playoff game in the second round and the third round. This wasn't even a first round. This was like deep into the playoffs against the Rangers and Penguins. They had a couple of games that didn't sell out. But if you guys remember in the playoffs last year when the Nashville Predators were sort of stealing all the headlines, and rightfully so, for having this great atmosphere in a sold-out arena at Bridgestone, they were getting, I believe their capacity, I want to say, is about 17,300, okay? Ottawa was drawing about 18,300 or something. They had about 1,000 people more at their games, but they were about 200-300 short of a sellout, and that was the bigger story. People were like, oh my God, this is not a hockey market. They can't sell out their own building in the playoffs. What a joke. Look at Nashville. They're selling it out. And what Ottawa was trying to say is, well, listen, we're actually getting more people in our arena than they are in Nashville, but our rink is bigger than Nashville, Winnipeg, and you know, some of these markets that they sort of align themselves with. So whether or not this works, I don't know. The whole plan is, guys, that they're planning to move to a downtown arena. If they can get all the red tape cleared, they'd like to move into the new arena in about 4 years from now. And at that point, I think the new arena will be at the most 17,000, maybe 16,500, 17,000, somewhere in that ballpark. But I think this is a little bit of a test drive to see how the market will respond to a building that's seated with 17,000 people.
Ian Mendez from TSN 1200 in Ottawa joining us this morning on the Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN 1290, 14 minutes past the hour. This segment is brought to you by Olympic Building Center. Trevor Harris looks to be missing a couple of weeks. Drew Tate is expected to get the start, at least when the Bombers come back from the bye in a week and a half, I guess. Ian, your thoughts on Drew Tate and how long you think Trevor Harris will be out, as he was leading the league in passing before his injury?
Yeah, and I think, to be honest with you, I think this is even though he's going to miss multiple weeks, according to the head coach, Rick Campbell, I think this is the best case scenario. Because I'll be honest with you, when I was watching that game on Saturday and he got drilled into the turf and he went sort of right shoulder first, I thought, oh man, I thought it was maybe his clavicle, maybe it was collarbone, shoulder blade, something, and this guy was going to be ruled out for the year. They're saying it's just deep, deep bruising in his throwing arm and shoulder, and so they're saying it's going to be multiple weeks, and that's probably best-case scenario, given that he had his arm in a sling and was standing there in the second half of that game against Hamilton. So, you know, on Drew Tate, hey, this is a guy that has been a starter in the CFL before. He actually looked all right. He threw a nice touchdown pass to Josh Stangby in the second half of that game, and, I think when they brought him in, it was thinking, okay, at some point there might be an injury, and last year Ottawa – they saw the benefit of having two capable, competent quarterbacks in the CFL when Henry Burris went down, Trevor Harris stepped in, and the hope is that Drew Tate can just step in. But all of a sudden, I think it gets real interesting for the Red Blacks, and I think for everybody in the CFL East, to be honest with you, because here comes Hamilton, who at 0-8 a couple of weeks ago and mired in the, hey, they worked out Johnny Manziel and they tried to hire Art Briles, and they were written off for dead. They've won two games in a row, and I think the Red Blacks were, to be honest with you, I think they were a little guilty of being overconfident in that game against Hamilton, and now maybe because their number one quarterback is out and because they lost a game to arguably the worst team in the CFL, I think that maybe the attention to detail will be a little bit better in this week's game against Montreal and then the subsequent one against Winnipeg, that you're hoping if you're Drew Tate that loss against Hamilton will kind of catch everyone's attention, because all of a sudden it looked like the Red Blacks were back on track to be the sort of the cream of the crop in the East. And now, as silly as it sounds, you can't even rule out Hamilton from winning that division. How ridiculous is that?
Yeah, no kidding. Ian, we were going to ask you about the Dallas Cowboys, but we're right out of time, so we got to go. I'm sorry.
Oh, something tells me if they had lost, you guys would have had plenty of time.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe we will for sure next week, though. Thanks for doing this, Ian. All the best, my man.
Anytime, guys. My pleasure.
Thanks, Ian. Take care.
Ian Mendez, once again, from TSN 1200. And this segment was a presentation of Olympic Buildings. Buildings, straightforward or complex, it's what they do best. Tour their projects at olympic-buildings.ca. Your chance to qualify for You Know What is coming up next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through at 780-1290 as TSN 1290 presents Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, and they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We'll supply two hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Las Vegas, four nights accommodations right on the Strip, and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. You can listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m. and 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show, 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable with Mr. Kevin Olszewski, and then Hustler and Rick Ralph will have your final chance of the day to qualify on air with the afternoon ride at 5:15. You can also watch for bonus chances to qualify online. We did one yesterday on our TSN 1290 Facebook page. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show, September 11th, September 25th, October 9th, and 23rd, and November 6th. And, of course, yesterday being September 11th, Kevin Williams was our first grand prize winner. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas. Go all in with TSN 1290. This is The Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour. We're going to get the 12th caller through to qualify with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. And as we said yesterday, Mr. Kevin Williams, very, very excited to be going to Vegas and looking for somebody to go with him, as his fiance doesn't like to fly. Shouldn't say she's afraid of flying. I guess that's what it does mean, but she just doesn't want to, doesn't like it.
Yeah.
So that's where we'll go.
I'm the same way. I get it.
Are you?
Hate flying. Like, really? I hate it. I've gotten so much better, too, but it used to be almost to the point where I wouldn't go on trips.
You got to pop pills and all that stuff to survive it, or bring a flask? How do you deal with it?
Yeah, more the flask than the pills.
Flask thing? Yeah.
That reminds me of a buddy of mine I used to cut lawns with in college.
It's the second time we've heard this. And that is the starting point.
A guy I grew up with texted me, and he said, I'm on a flight from Toronto back to Calgary, and I think I shouldn't even say his name. I would call him Stewball, because I think Stewball just getting tossed off this flight. So right away, I just text Stewball, who I used to cut grass with, and I haven't talked to him in years. I'm surprised the number still worked. And my phone rings, and I'm like, hello. And he's like, oh, Jeff, they just wouldn't let me on anymore. I just got carried away. And I'm like, I haven't talked to the guy in 10 years.
Really?
He goes, you know, I get nervous when I fly, and my flight was delayed. I'm like, just out of the blue, the phone rings for like after 9 years of no conversation going, did you just get tossed off a flight? He goes, how do you know this? You're journalists. You're everywhere. And I'm just like, good to talk to you, Stu. Bowl. Anyways, let's get to the point here on Hockey Nights in Vegas. Who's our latest qualifier on 12th caller through?
It's Victor Janis.
Victor Janis.
Jenny.
Congratulations, Victor. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great now.
Excellent. Are you afraid of flying?
No, not at all.
Good man. Good man. Have you ever been to Vegas?
I've been to Vegas a couple times, yeah.
Ooh, veteran. There's a veteran tone to that, yeah.
I bet you have. There's a veteran knowledge right there. Do you know who you'd be taking if you're one of our grand prize winners here on Hockey Nights in Vegas?
Well, my wife's not afraid of flying, so probably I'd be taking her.
That'd be nice.
He says,
yeah. Excited for the Jets season coming up?
Yeah, looking forward to lots of good promise coming up.
What do you think of the Golden Knights, actually?
I like the logo. The rest, I don't know. I guess we'll all have to see what happens.
Well, that'll be one of the exciting parts of seeing the Winnipeg Jets, if you are one of our grand prize winners, taking on the Las Vegas Golden Knights for the first time on November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. You're in for the other four grand prize draws, September 25th, October 9th, October 23rd, and November 6th. And Victor, just for qualifying today on The Big Show, you get a Jets Gear gift card. Thanks for listening to TSN 1290, and best of luck.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Good luck, Jenny.
Victor Janis, our latest qualifier. We'll do that again at 8:15, and not afraid of flying, so he won't pull a quote-unquote stew ball and have to liquefy in order to make the flight down to Las Vegas. Thanks for listening, and we'll do it all again at 8:15. This is the Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290. As we were doing earlier, Kevin Cheveldayoff was in discussion with Mr. Bob McKenzie at the Young Stars Tournament, I believe is where they record those. And we'll share some more of his thoughts now on The Big Show. Here's Cheveldayoff on injuries.
Well, these are things you can't control in this game. You know, Brian Little, who ended two seasons ago with the neck injury and then, you know, had a fantastic training camp ready to go. Two shifts into last season, he gets hurt and he misses 20 games. And, you know, how many teams can sustain, you know, again, I know we can't, where you lose, your top-end centerman, a top-six centerman in the league for an extended period of time. And, you know, Brian, who's was our face-off leader in win percentage, he's, plays penalty kill, he plays power play. So, again, those are things. We talk about, obviously, Toby and Tyler. And, you know, Tyler had a lot of things on the go last year with personal issues with the birth of his son and obviously his injury. So, these guys are professionals. They've worked hard. They've trained hard. But again, injuries are part of this game. And with the signing of Kulikov, with the signing of Hendricks, with the signing of Mason, and we feel that we've added to our depth, and we do have some young players that are knocking. But we've got enough of a core now that we've had year over year that you start to that core is the one that takes over the team. You're not so much looking to have to have the impact from the young players. But we do have young players that we believe can make impact, and again, just from a young player standpoint, it's not how they actually start, it's how they finish. So I think, that aspect of things can help us, down the stretch.
You expect Myers and Enstrom to start the season 100% healthy?
Yeah, that seems to be the case here right now.
So they are healthy, and that'll make a big difference. And that's the problem with injuries, too, is it's not so much the injuries, it's the depth in the organization on how you handle those. And obviously the Jets are more suited this year with, as Kevin Cheveldayoff talked about, with some of the additions. We'll hear about his thoughts on Dmitry Kulikov and Mr. Jacob Trouba and Poolman's chances of making the team later on in the show. Up next, voice of the Jets, Paul Edmonds, on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 in the Royal Sports Power Hour, 33 minutes past the hour. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. And our next segment is with the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, Mr. Paul Edmonds. This segment with Paul is brought to you by GoChase Chevrolet on McPhillips, where for the month of September, get 0% financing on most new vehicles and get a Vegas vacation for two included. GoChase Chevrolet, 1400 McPhillips at Inkster. Mr. Edmonds, I often get asked a question, and I don't know why. Maybe it's because I have a BlackBerry Q10, state of the art. Who uses a payphone anymore? And we finally found somebody.
Well, I'm making my way out to Crow Duck Lake today for the Bombers Never Alone Foundation annual fishing derby. And I got to Rennie, Manitoba, and realized I didn't have a signal and we were going to be on the air. So fortunately, they still have a payphone here in Rennie. So I called Collect. And guess what? Rewicki accepted the charges.
That's nice of you, Brandon. Very nice of you. We'll just start with some of your impressions. Jansen Harkins with two goals yesterday to wrap up the Young Stars tournament. The Jets go 1-2.
He was real good, and so was the team yesterday. I thought the Jansen, this is his third tournament, or it was his third tournament, and because of that, I think there's a little bit more of an expectation on a guy like that, and from himself as well. And I got an opportunity to talk to him before the tournament started, and we kind of sat down and had a real good chat about that. And, you know, this is a year for him to kind of push a little bit further into the Winnipeg Jets system. And he's got a taste of AHL hockey, 10 games combined in the last 2 years, four last year after his season in Prince George ended. And he's not going to go back to Major Junior as a 20-year-old. So, you know, it's the AHL this year probably. But I really thought that he played well. I thought that he took what he did at the development camp, which was kind of put a focus on him because he was one of the better players back in July, and just kind of expanded that role a little bit. And as a result, he had a couple goals yesterday and just played on the top line all three games, and I thought was one of those guys that was very noticeable, and certainly is a guy that I think that we can say will provide some depth up the middle as the years go by here in the future. The other part of it is, too, for him, was they had him on the left wing, they had him at center, and they had him at right wing. So he played a number of different positions throughout the course of the weekend in Penticton. And I think one of the reasons for that is you want to assess the player's versatility. In case there's not a spot in the middle of the lineup or in the middle of the ice for a player like Jansen Harkins, but you want him in your lineup and you might have to move him, say, to the wall. So I thought that he acquitted himself very well there, and I thought was one of the best players for the Winnipeg Jets Young Stars all weekend. And, of course, that culminated with a great effort by the team yesterday. I thought they just skated Calgary right into the ice, and I thought that they got better. The Jets Young Stars team got better under Pascal Vincent as the weekend went along. And if you attended the practices, you would know why. They were there was battle drills and hard-fought time and space for pucks and areas, and the pace was high and the tempo was great, and they carried that over into the last game. I thought that as the weekend went along and unfolded, the Winnipeg Jets Young Stars got better, and one of the best players was certainly Jansen Harkins throughout the weekend.
Paulie, I thought Jim made an interesting point where this year is, I think, the first year that in watching this Young Stars tournament, and typically there'd be one or two guys you'd wonder if they might be able to make the jump up to the big club in years past, but with where this organization is situated right now, that's really not the case this year, with things mostly set with what's becoming sort of an established group.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. Kevin Cheveldayoff kind of addressed that yesterday, that they wanted to really give an opportunity to some of the players lower on their depth chart or within their organization. They brought 11 invitees to the tournament. So there was some guys that they wanted to have a look at that maybe might be late bloomers or fell through the cracks on draft day. So they left some players that probably could have played at this tournament again, like Roslovic or O'Connor. But you're right, there's not going to be a whole lot of change from last year's team. Maybe a couple of spots in the bottom end of the forward side, and then, of course, the new faces they brought in via free agency. But everything's going to be pretty much set. And the only guy I would think that from this weekend, this tournament, that might have a chance to push into the Jets level this year at the NHL would be Tucker Poolman. And by the way, I thought he played pretty well yesterday. But he would be the only guy, and maybe Jansen Harkins at some point. I don't think that they're going to start at the NHL level. But if there's an injury or there's some sort of a urgency to get these guys into a National Hockey League game at some point, I think that both Tucker Poolman and Jansen Harkins could be candidates to be vaulted from the Manitoba Moose into the National Hockey League for a game or two or a week or whatever it is if they have to spell somebody off. So I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of these names that we saw over the course of the weekend be familiar to Winnipeg Jets fans by the time that the season starts. In fact, I think that you're probably going to get to the point here coming up when training camp starts that a lot of these guys that were in Penticton will probably find their way back to their major junior teams or maybe somewhere else, or in the case of Tyler Bowen, maybe CIS hockey at the University of New Brunswick, although I think he did maybe enough to acquit himself of an opportunity of playing a little bit further into Winnipeg Jets training camp and maybe get an exhibition game or two. But having said that, it was a different year for the organization this year in terms of what they brought to Penticton. And I thought that, you know, very quickly the group gelled under Pascal Vincent. It was kind of refreshing to see, and they really sort of had that team unity. I guess they were all kindred spirits, right? A lot of cast-offs, a lot of guys that could probably share the same story about draft day or not getting drafted on draft day and just had something to prove. So because of that, it was pretty spirited all weekend from the group.
Paul, can you elaborate on what you saw from Tucker Poolman yesterday, given it was just his first game since the surgeries?
Yeah, I really liked what I saw from Tucker Poolman yesterday. He was champing at the bit to get into the lineup. You know, obviously you want to test yourself. You've had double shoulder surgery, and you want to make sure that that you're okay and that you can maybe lay a body check or get bumped around a little bit. He's a big guy, so, I mean, not a lot of people are going to throw him around on the ice, especially at that level at 6'4". But, boy, he's just smooth skating, and he looked poised out there. And every time he touched the puck, he made the right decision with it. And he was in the right spot all the time in his own zone as well, defensively without the puck. So it was only one game, but you could see why he was or he has been highly touted by the Winnipeg Jets, and why that they wanted to get him signed out of UND this past season so that they didn't lose him. So they've got him for 2 years on an entry-level deal here, and I think at some point we're going to see him push into the National Hockey League level in the not-too-distant future, but I would probably say that he's going to start with the Manitoba Moose. But I really liked what I saw from him yesterday on the right side, and I actually think that he made Logan Stanley a little bit better. Stanley seemed to have a little bit of a more simplistic game yesterday, and that's all Tucker Poolman did. He just made the right play. He took a guy wide, or he was in the right spot, and you noticed him because he was doing all of the right things, and he didn't make a glaring mistake. So, you know, he said after the game that he was glad to get in there and kind of test out the shoulders, and I'm sure he was. They wanted to get him in. They said, going into the weekend, guys, that he wasn't going to play all three games, and he didn't. He didn't play Friday or Saturday, and then was able to skate with the team throughout the morning skates, and then, of course, the practice day on Sunday, and then suited up yesterday for the last game. But, yeah, he was probably, next to Jansen Harkins, probably the most poised and noticeable player for the right reasons on the ice, just because of his size and just the way he played. There was an aura of confidence around him when he stepped on the ice last night or yesterday morning for sure.
Paulie, the Jets last year had the second most man games lost in the NHL. And nobody likes to make excuses, but facts are what they are. And when you're losing starters or missing starters, you're going to be held back a little bit as a team. We see the Preds get affected early this offseason, losing Ryan Ellis for 4 to 6 months sort of thing. Boy, if there's a team in the NHL that deserves some good luck upcoming this season with injury, certainly the Jets have got to be one of them. Let's hope getting lucky to be healthy here is super important, huh?
You know, it's funny that you talk about that, because yesterday during the second intermission, we had Kevin Cheveldayoff off on, and we asked him about evaluation questions and this guy and that guy and just some things that were going on and the roster that they brought to Penticton. And then at the end, I asked him about, there's a certain in year seven this year, there's a different level of expectation and excitement, I think, with the fan base and everything surrounding this team and the team itself. I think there's a lot more expected. We've talked about that, and we will again leading up to, you know, puck drop in October for the first game against Toronto. But I asked Kevin about the excitement that he has this year in year seven because of all of that. And the first thing out of his mouth, Westy, was that he's excited about the season, can't wait to get going, but would really like to have a year where his team, for the most part, is intact and not decimated by injury. And the word that he used was healthy. So, you know, that has not been lost in the organization the last 2 years. The blue line's been a trouble spot for injury the last two seasons. They've missed some significant time with Brian Little in each of the last 2 years. So there's been a lot of major injuries to some key players on the team. And, you know, last year you had Blake Wheeler playing center at times and just, you know, all hands on deck because they were decimated by those injuries the last two seasons. And let's face it, I mean, your depth gets tested when you have players that are missing. And while they fared pretty well in light of all of that, or in spite of all of those injuries, it still does take its toll on a team when you're not putting out every night your best lineup that you have available, to you and what you thought you were going to have when camp broke and you were going to start the regular season. So that would be the one thing I'm just echoing, Kevin, that if this team is healthy this year, with the improvements that they've made on the lineup through free agency, that they're probably going to have a lot better season this year and maybe push into the playoffs. And as you guys were talking about this morning, that one win away from Nashville, they were that close. And if they can stay healthy, then I think that gets them over the top and into the postseason this year.
Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets right here on TSN 1290, joining us on the Royal Sports Power Hour here on the Big Show, 44 minutes past the hour. Paul, it's been a little bit since we've had you on, and just hearing the comments, not only around the extensions for Cheval Dayoff and Maurice, but some of the players, some of the expectations, and then the whole rise together. To me, it just stands out a bit where it feels like the organization, more so than the fans, have confidence that they're going to make the next step this year. Are you feeling that as you prepare for training camp, that they themselves feel that on paper they're finally where they want to be to take that step?
Yeah, I do. I mean, certainly Blake Wheeler has come out and, hasn't been just a bunch of bravado. I think he firmly believes in what he's saying. That's the way that Blake rolls, that they've got a team, and Mark Scheifele has done the same, that has not been that far off the last couple of years. And they feel not only can they knock on the door to get into the postseason, I firmly believe this, that there is a belief within that dressing room that once they get in, that, you know, all bets are off on how far they can really go. And I don't know that they're going to pinpoint anything in terms of an expectation of where they want to finish, but, you know, they're going to be challenging in that central division and for a wild card. But I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if the Winnipeg Jets challenge for one of those top three spots in the division this year, just based on the fact that they've been so close the last couple of years, based on the injuries that they've had and with the adversity they've had to face. Now, you know, you get some good goaltending and you improve on your power play and your penalty kill gets a little bit better. You take less penalties. You're better in your own zone. And I think the world is their oyster. But, yeah, the players are certainly feeling that that they're not that far off, or they haven't been, and this might be the year. I mean, you got Blake Wheeler with 2 years left on his deal. You got Brian Little going into the last year of his deal unless there's an extension on the horizon. So for some of these guys, the window might be closing, and they sense that. But they also sense they've got a real good young team. And I think the nail was hit on the head when Blake Wheeler said that for the first time, and this was just last week, I think, in a couple of years, they're going to go into a season where they're not training on the job a handful or three or four young guys. I mean, the young guys now have gotten experience at the NHL level behind them. Nick Ehlers is now into his third season. Patrick Laine in his second. The list goes on. Josh Morrissey into his second. So you're not auditioning your young talent for jobs. These guys are now NHLers. They're bona fide NHLers, and you don't have that. So what you have is a good, healthy competition level at training camp for a bottom couple of spots on your forward core and maybe one or two on your defensive core. But for the most part, it's a veteran lineup that they're going to throw out there, and they're not training anybody to take the apprenticeship, if you will, of on-the-job training in the National Hockey League. So based on that, you know, you hit the ground running because there's not a whole lot of teaching to be done or experience gaining to be done from some of the young players that push into the lineup. They're not going to have that this year. So based on that, I think that there's a high expectation, and the players certainly know that, but they also know, and they're embracing it, that they're maybe on the cusp of a special season.
Great stuff, Paul, and happy fishing at the Never Alone item today.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, it should be a great day. 32 degrees on a boat. Woo!
Well, think of us when they bring you that shore lunch, brother. Enjoy, man.
See you, guys.
Paul Edmonds, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets, joining us here on TSN 1290. The Royal Sports Power Hour wraps up next segment with NHL news and notes next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. We're going to talk some football with Milt Stegall at the top of the hour. NFL, Jason Cole at the bottom of the next hour. Another chance to qualify as well. Don't forget about the Boston Pizza fan line. Wide open at 9 a.m. today. NHL news and notes time, gentlemen. And Daniel Winnick will spend training camp with the Minnesota Wild. The 32-year-old has agreed to a PTO with the Minnesota Wild. Think he has a shot of making that team?
Yeah, he's got a shot, I suppose. Another example here of a guy, you know, the whole PTO thing. Maybe he had 25 points in 72 games last year in Washington. So, yeah, maybe there's some sort of a role that he can play there, going to a little bit ominous for him, but flexible, right? He's talking about a guy that can be on the wall or be in the middle, going to arguably the deepest forward group in the NHL. He's got a shot.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, that's the guy I would have liked to have seen the Jets target if they were looking for a fourth-line penalty kill player. Because over the past few seasons, he's been amongst league leaders in penalty kill time among forwards, and he does a very, very good job of it. And like Troy said, he can still put in a fair amount of points for you on that fourth line and gives you that center wing flexibility. So it's another good pickup by the Wild. You know, a team that really didn't need to get deeper at forward, I think picked up a pretty solid piece when you look at guys that are signing some of the PTOs nowadays.
Yeah, I don't mind Daniel Winnick at all, actually. And I think we talked about this early in the off season when we were looking at potential people with Jager and all that I didn't mind bringing on Winnick on board as that fourth line piece. I don't know if he has a shot at making the Minnesota Wild, though, as such a deep forward squad down there. But you never know. He might make it work. Other news and notes, we touched on this a bit yesterday with Mr. Bergevin in Montreal saying that he's done seeing Galchenyuk at center and will play wing. We didn't touch too much on the fact that Jonathan Drouin looks to be playing center for the Montreal Canadiens as they continue to look for that depth down the middle. Drouin and the Montreal Canadiens and the fit, and especially playing center, do you see this working out? Do you see him producing a lot?
Well, there's the production, no question about it. It will be interesting to see how, and, you know, he's coming out saying, well, you know, I spent time there and all the rest of it. But, boy, the expectations, it's almost like Jonathan Drouin is the messiah for the Montreal Canadiens at this point in a lot of ways. And putting the additional responsibilities of things defensive on his shoulders for that position and all the rest of it, what an opportunity for him. I suppose, you know, you could cower or look at it from afar and be concerned for his future just with the expectations, or it's like there's this gigantic door sitting in front of Jonathan Drouin. If there was any thought in his and his camp's mind that being in Tampa Bay under Steve Yzerman was going to hold him back from reaching whatever his potential might be, the exact opposite, I suppose, is true in Montreal with Bergevin and dumping him in at center and all the rest of it, right? Like every single opportunity is going to be given to him to become the largest star possible. And I'm cheering that it all comes to fruition, but the amount of expectation on him is remarkable.
Yeah, it seems like it's 70 points is kind of the floor for Drouin with Montreal. Like nothing bad could come of that, right? A French-Canadian having untold amount of expectations thrown upon his shoulders before he even puts the jersey on in the game. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's a good move or not because we haven't seen him play center. Played a bit in juniors, but that's really about it. I mean, I think it could work. And it's not like if you put Drouin at center that you can't maybe shift some of the responsibilities that you traditionally ask of a centerman towards somebody else on his line. Like it's you can work around that if he's not totally comfortable with playing down low with the defensive zone and things like that. So I don't know. I think it could work. It's tough to pin that without really seeing it in action yet. But the one thing that's standing out to me is they are expecting Jonathan Drouin to be their best forward immediately, like from game one. And you really hope it works out, because things can turn real ugly real quick in Montreal if they get off to a slow start this year.
Defenseman Damon Severson hopes to be improve on his top four role as he gets a six-year, $25 million contract with the New Jersey Devils. It has an average annual hit on the cap at $4.17 million. And maybe the trend is changing as well, as it does not include a no-trade clause. $4.17 million for him with New Jersey. Do you like that deal? Around the same money they signed Adam Larson to prior to trading him to Edmonton.
Yeah, I don't have the problem with that deal at all. It is I do like some of the there haven't been many teams as active as the Devils in the offseason here, and just some real interesting adds, and it's there's a possibility here that the Devils could be a little bit sneaky good this year, certainly compared to last year, being what was it, 17 points out of second last in the Metro. There's all kinds of distance there. They're going to close that gap, and just a lot of interesting ads, but a decent signing here.
Yeah, I'm going to – I mean, it's all right. I see absolutely no way they're not dead last in the division. Like, you know, Severson's a fine player. It's an okay contract. I don't know. Do the Devils excite anyone, though, like ever? They're just to me. They're
well,
just
even when they
boring.
Were good, they didn't excite anybody.
Yeah, I look at their roster, and I mean, he sure we haven't seen him yet. But you look at their defense, and the defense is not. It's just not good. There's no other way to really put it. Their defense just isn't very good, and they're going to need Schneider. I don't know. I really wonder what the Devils do with Corey Schneider. You know, with a guy at his age, he's going to be 32 midway through the season.
Still 5 years. 4 years after this one,
yeah,
on his contract.
You wonder, I don't know. I wonder, to me, Corey Schneider is the most interesting player on the Devils roster, and it's more so not what he does on the ice. It's just, at what point do the Devils look at maybe making a move with him and, you know, trying to match up their, I guess, competitive window more so with Kincaid and with Mackenzie Blackwood as opposed to what Schneider gives you.
Interesting. We'll take a break, talk some CFL with Milt Stegall next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
TSN 1290 and Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090 with standard message rates applying. Every time you do, Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital help caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaelia, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Jason Cole is going to join us at the bottom of the hour to talk some NFL. We have your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas, and we'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line, which will be open from 9 till 10. One of the questions we're asking today is, with the Bombers on the bye week and sitting at 8-3, do you consider them a legitimate Grey Cup contender? And we welcome in a former Blue Bomber great and a big part of the CFL panel on TSN, Mr. Milt Stegall. Milt, do you think the Bombers are a legitimate Grey Cup contender?
Well, it all depends on what your true definition of contender is. If you ask me right now who I thought would make the Grey Cup out of the West, of course it would be Calgary. So that is a question where I guess I have to sit on the fence right now. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers have done everything except show me that they can beat Calgary. So I'm going to hold off on that question or that answer right now until they prove that. It was the same way when Saskatchewan was playing well, when Edmonton was playing well, because Calgary right now is the measuring stick. So they have to show me that. So they've done – they won 100% to get to the Grey Cup. They have a 99.9. in my opinion, right now.
Milt, we saw in this in the Banjo Bowl the week before, the Bombers didn't send the ball down the field often enough. I believe they had two passes over 14 yards, and we saw Matt Nichols try and launch it down the field. I don't believe he was successful in any of his deep-type throws, and it seems to me what the Bombers are really missing is a guy like Adarius Bowman or Daron Carter or Manny Arsenal, a guy that'll go up and with his strength and athleticism go get those 50-50 balls. And they try and depend on Darvin Adams for it, but at 6'2 and 190, I just don't think he's physical enough to go get those. Is that the one piece that's missing from this Bombers offense?
Well, it would be nice to have that. I'm sure Paul LaPolice would love to have that, but he's able to adjust. Of course, you would like to have that in your arsenal. Like you said, they try to use Darvin Adams. He has the height, but he doesn't have the size and the strength, as evident as you saw with him and Javon Johnson battling. With Javon Johnson is, 5'10", and he couldn't get up and get those balls over Javon. So it would be nice to have those. Those aren't necessary. It definitely helps out your offense, but a guy like Paul LaPolice will adjust. Now, will they try to go out and get one of those guys? I don't know, because the chemistry they have within their offense right now, I don't know if you want to disturb that by putting one of those guys in, and then who would you sit down? So Paul will adjust, and if he gets one of those guys, he will adjust also. But I think right now they'll be okay.
Milt, what did you think of the Badger Bowl and the fashion, which the way the Bombers won it with the interception, the punt, some offense, everything that went in for them to get a 48-28 win?
Well, my thing is it doesn't matter how you win, just win. And the thing I was impressed, that impressed me more than anything, was the fact that Matt Nichols, he didn't turn the ball over. That was a big reason why they weren't able to get into the Labor Day Classic. There were too many turnovers, but he came out, he played well. And people are going to start saying, well, they're winning the same way they won last year, with turnovers and special teams playing. Hey, that's the way you're going to win? Go ahead and do it. Marius Leggett had a great game. The defense played well, especially in that second half. That first half, they allowed some big plays, but it wasn't like those receivers for Saskatchewan were just running great routes. They were just leaving them wide open. They made the adjustments in that second half, came out and played a great game.
Milt? Kevin Glenn is watching practice, but nothing broken in his hand. Travis Lule out for the season, and now that falls on the shoulders of Jonathan Jennings. There's going to be a real good team that finishes fifth in the West Division this year. Who ends up finishing fifth?
I'm going to say the BC Lions. I don't think Jennings. I think his confidence is down right now. I love the fact that they had inserted Lule back in there, but now he's done for the year. So now they have no choice but to depend on Jennings. And I don't think the way he's played so far this year, he'll be able to carry them to that fourth and final spot in the playoffs for the West. So I think it's going to be the BC Lions. I think Edmonton will get it together. They have some guys back. Their receiving core is outstanding. So I think that would allow them to get themselves into the playoffs. But I just don't think Jennings' confidence level is at a level right now where he'll be able to get his team into the playoffs.
What's the main difference you've seen in Hamilton, Milt, and can they keep this two-game winning streak going?
I think it's possible. I like the fact that they're getting C.J. Gable involved, and then their quarterback, Mazzoli. He's not your typical drop-back quarterback, but he uses his legs. And when you have a quarterback who can do that and do it in a successful level, that puts a lot of pressure on opposing defenses. I mean, you can't practice for something like that. And when you have a second and long situation and you have a quarterback who rushes for, 10, 11 yards and gets the first down, that's demoralizing for a defense. So if they can keep those two things up and throw Speedy Banks in there every now and then for a big play, they have an opportunity. You never know it. And in the Eastern Conference, I mean, they're two games out of first place, which is crazy when you start off 0-8. So, it would be a story if they happen to make the playoffs, because we know only two teams are going to make it. But, hey, you never know what can happen.
Milt, it doesn't matter what contact sport you're talking about. We're seeing all leagues struggle with implementing things related to player safety and headshots. It's just hopefully it gets a little bit cleaner going forward. But right now it's a tough thing. And in that Calgary-Edmonton game, in the red zone, Mike Riley on the field takes a good shot and a headshot from Jagerrod Davis. Pops up right away, though. No flag on the play. And then the concussion spotter forces him out of the game when they're in the red zone. And even Mike Riley himself says, I don't know if it made an impact on the game, but it was a real frustrating situation. When I pop up right away, there's no flag on the play, and I get removed out of the red zone because of concussion protocol. Your thought on that whole sequence?
Well, first of all, I want to commend whoever was making that call to get him out of the game. I mean, we're talking about someone's brain. You know, it's safety. Was he rattled? Was he injured? I don't know. But I like the fact that they did that. I mean, it's difficult to call every single play because there's head-to-head contact on every single play if you wanted to call it. You know, that one being an open field, you think that would see that. But we all know officials aren't perfect. And the thing about football, it's going to happen. It's just about impossible to get that out of the game. I mean, you want to train the younger kids or high school or college kids to change the way they play, but it's difficult. It's going to take a long time for that to be out of the game. And in my opinion, I don't think it will ever be out of the game because even if you have the defenders having the correct way to tackle, you have offensive guys who are putting down their head at the last second to protect themselves. So, I mean, it's a difficult situation. You want to try to rectify it, but in my opinion, it's almost impossible because the game moves so fast and things are happen so quickly that, you know, it's hard to see it. It's hard to regulate it. So hopefully we get it correctly. Hopefully we get it corrected, but I don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon.
Milt Stegall joining us this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290, as we talk CFL, 13 minutes past the hour. Darrell Walker, immediate impact on the Edmonton Eskimos. How much does this change the dynamic amongst that receiving core and the talent they already have?
Oh, man, it's big. It's humongous. It surprised me a little bit that he was able to come right in and make an impact. And I know he's been going through NFL training camp. He was in shape. But it's still a different type of game. But the fact that he was able to come in like that, I think he had, 8 catches for almost 100 yards. That's pretty impressive. So they have a dynamic receiving core. They have a dynamic quarterback. Now, the thing is, would their offensive line be able to protect that quarterback so he can get the ball to that dynamic receiving core? So it's going to be interesting. You know, they're in a slide right now. They're definitely trending down 4 games in a row that they've lost, so they have to get it going. So they're going to lean heavily on that receiving core, starting with Darrell Walker. He may become their number one guy right now because he's a dynamic player. So it's going to be interesting because they need to get the ball rolling because they don't want to continue slipping because we know how difficult it is they're going to be to make the playoffs in that dynamic, very competitive Western Conference.
Milt, Bo Levi Mitchell isn't playing at a real high level compared to what we've seen in the past anyway, and the Stamps are as dominant as they are. And I'm not sure that you look at the quarterbacks who very often win the most outstanding player awards, and I don't know who is standing out the very most or creating separation. If Andrew Harris goes 1,000 yards on the ground and in the air, do you think he captures the most outstanding player with that?
Without a doubt. I can see his competition being his quarterback. You want to throw Bo Levi Mitchell in there, but it's difficult because he set the bar so high for Bo Levi Mitchell, and he's not living up to that standard. He's still having a great year. I believe he has, 16 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, over 3,000 yards, but that's not a Bo Levi Mitchell type year. The fact that they're winning games, you may put him in there, but if Andrew Harris, if he can finish up with 1,000 and 1,000, he definitely has to be the favorite. I don't see anyone in the East competing with him at all. You may throw in Ellingson because he's having a great year, but his competition may be the man in the backfield with him and his quarterback, and Mac Nichols. So we never know what Bo Levi Mitchell is capable of. He may finish up strong this last half of the season and totally surprise everyone and come away with the MOP. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be difficult, though, if Andrew Harris is able to come away with 1,000 yards receiving and 1,000 yards rushing.
Finally, Milt, we're past the midway point of the season. Toronto Argos are 4-7, second in the East, 8 points on the year. What have your thoughts been on the impressions of Mark Trestman and Jim Popp and what they've gotten done there? Are they right on pace? Have they exceeded? Are they below expectations from what you thought they'd do?
It's hard to tell because, you know, all the changes they made, they were making them right before training camp, you know, bringing in guys like Bear Woods and those guys at the last second, S.J. Green trading for him. So they're still trying to gel together. I think the one thing that helps them out is their defense. Corey Chamberlain is doing a great job, even with missing some of his main guys. So I think that's going to get them over. I don't think it has anything to do with Mark Trestman being the quarterback whisperer, as they say, because, you know, your father Tom is undefeated, and Ricky Ray Father Time is kicking in the door right now on him. His arm strength is not there. He's taking a pounding. So they're going to have to rely on that defense if they want to make it to the playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see what type of impact Mark Trestman or anyone else has on that team, because, you know, right now they're just rattled right now because their offense can't get it done, and it has a lot to do with the fact that Ricky Ray just can't get it done anymore. Will they make the playoffs? I think they will, because Ottawa will start sputtering because they don't have Trevor Harris. I don't think they'll have much impact if and when they do make the playoffs, though.
Always a pleasure, Milt. Thanks for your time. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Will, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Take care, brother.
Milt,
all right, take care.
Milt Stegall joining us this morning on The Big Show. Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is next on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through at 780-1290 will be our next qualifier for Hockey Nights in Vegas, as TSN 1290 is sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November to see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights at T-Mobile Arena on the 10th of November. We'll supply two hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Sin City, four nights accommodations right on the strip, and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras. It's your second chance to qualify, as we do it weekdays on The Big Show at 7:15 and 8:15. Then Kevin Olszewski on the Don Vito Roundtable has a chance at 12:15 and 5:15 on the afternoon ride with Hustler and Mr. Rick Ralph. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show. We did one yesterday. Congratulations once again to Kevin Williams. And September 25th is our next grand prize winner draw. October 9th, October 23rd, November 6th. For more information, check out TSN1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, go all in with TSN 1290. And again, a reminder to watch for bonus chances to qualify online, as we did one yesterday on our TSN 1290 Facebook page. To see, Richard.
That's right. Richard.
You went the Rocket Richard.
Rocket Richard Richard.
That's right. Yeah. That's a good handle. Our first qualifier today was Victor Janis, and our next qualifier who will get a Jets Gear gift card is?
It's Steve Radford.
Steve Radford! Congratulations. You are our latest qualifier, and you're in for the next four grand prize draws. And, of course, just for doing so, you get a Jets Gear gift card for Hockey Nights in Vegas.
4 day!
Best of luck. Back to our conversation, or the conversation Kevin Cheveldayoff had with Mr. Bob McKenzie. We're going to hear Kevin Cheveldayoff's thoughts on Jacob Trouba in just a moment. But speaking of the defense, here's Cheveldayoff on Dmitry Kulikov.
Well, you go into free agency looking to try to, you know, do some things, and free agency is a very difficult time. It's a supply and demand type of situation. Sometimes the demand far outstrips the supply as far as what's out there. So when you have an opportunity to acquire someone through free agency that you know fits, and let's face it, like Dmitry had a tough year in Buffalo last year. He'll be the first to admit it. You know, right in preseason, he gets slammed into the boards and into the open door and hurts his back, and it was not a great season from that standpoint. But there's a body of work that's with him. I remember watching him in the playoffs, specifically, I guess, in the playoffs for Florida, and he was one of their best defensemen. So, we've got a real strong belief that, he'll be back. And again, that added depth. And Toby is becoming an unrestricted free agent, finished the season injured last two seasons. So you're always looking to acquire depth. And we feel we've got a real good young player coming into our system here, too, in Tucker Poolman, who, played college last year and had double shoulder surgery in the off season, so he's still coming off of that. So there's some exciting things, but nature has to take its course as well.
Cheveldayoff on Dmitry Kulikov. Now the big question around the defense has always been and will continue to be Mr. Jacob Trouba. Here's Kevin Cheveldayoff on Trouba.
Good news is we don't have to talk about a Jacob Trouba contract dispute going into this season. I'm sure you're happy about that. But he is eligible now for an extension, correct?
Yeah.
Have there been any talks in that regard?
We've had some loose conversations with his representatives, as we had with a lot of the guys. We've got obviously Brian Little, who's a pending UFA. We've got Ehlers. We've got Trouba. We've got Morrissey. We've got all these different players that are all eligible for extensions. So it's the dance, I guess, you've got to do in the National Hockey League to see where things go and where the cap might eventually go. But we've had various different degrees, not only with Trouba's camp, but with Ehlers and other camps as well for the extensions of players.
How likely are one of those major components, like a Trouba or an Ehlers or a Morrissey, to get an extension in season?
It's hard to put time frames on anything. I would say there's chances of it, but whether it happens, these things, sometimes happen organically, sometimes happen quickly, sometimes, happen on deadlines. So, we'll see how it goes. I can't put a time frame on any one of those guys.
There have been conversations with representatives of Jacob Trouba and the other pending UFAs or RFAs, but there have been conversations about extending Jacob Trouba.
If you can't sign Trouba to an 8-year extension prior to this, or with the situation of coming where he's arbitration eligible, do you have to trade him?
I don't think so.
This is his fifth season as he marches towards 7 years served.
I don't think you have to, but I think you look to. Because you do still have him under control for two more years, no matter what he tries to do. Mm-hmm. But if a deal's there for a defenseman, and I know there wasn't one last year, and there might not be one next year, but if a deal's there, well, you can make a move to get a similar defenseman who might be in a similar situation that's unhappy, I think you have to. You have to try and lock down security when it comes down to a guy who's their number one defenseman right now. Like that was how well he played last year. And you can't deal with that level of uncertainty moving forward.
So if it's not this year, and then the whole arbitration situation next year, it'll be a 1 or 2 year deal. At that point in time, then you have to trade him, right?
I think so.
I think with two more years left, you don't have to trade him until after next season. You have 3 years of control here. And if he doesn't want to sign that massive extension or – I know what you're saying. You're looking at it from the perspective of the longer this goes and the longer he doesn't sign, you might get less for him because people know you have to. Mm-hmm. But I think that you have control for 3 years. I don't think you have to trade him at the end of this season or at the end of next season. But heading into that final season, I think that you could still optimize anything that needs to get done.
I wonder about that, Jade. Like, this year, for sure, you can't just because of the situation with the team here. But if you're going to wait until his final year before he pops up a UFA because of 7 years served, it's getting scary, right? But we can forget about that and just focus on this year, right, with Trouba?
I don't think he can ever forget about it. We'll take a break, come back with some NFL talk and more on this as well on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Stream us on the iHeartRadio app and all your favorite devices, or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity or music. Your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki with you. Half an hour away from the Boss Pizza fan line. We'll tee that up for you in our next segment. Should mention this, last night's Vikings game, Randy Moss goes into the Vikings Ring of Honor. Of course, longtime Minnesota Vikings receiver, really made a name for himself there. But Sid Davey was front and center, and Sid Davey is one of the Vikings that sits in the end zone, has for years, and he's a Winnipeg resident. Now, I've talked to Sid. I've tailgated with him down in Minnesota a couple times. No longer living in Winnipeg. He now lives in Vancouver as of a couple of years ago. But for years and years and years, Sid Davey was the Viking at the end of what would catch Randy Moss and several of his touchdowns. Interesting Winnipeg connection there that Randy Moss made sure he was front and center with him at his induction in the Ring of Honor for the former Winnipegger now. Well, always will be a Winnipegger, but now lives in Vancouver with his wife. But back still going to Vikings game, has for years and years and years as one of the Vikings. Purple face, big dude, Westwood-like build.
Just seeing him now, I have no idea who he is.
Welcome back into the program from the Bleacher Report, Jason Cole, that talks some NFL. How are you, Jason?
I'm great. What's going on?
Not too much. We're just enjoying all the storylines that came out of week one, and I guess really injuries are one of the big things that have come out of week one and the results of it. And we'll start with David Johnson. How does this hurt the Cardinals? Does it cripple them, or can they sort of bounce back after that loss in Detroit without their star running back?
This one's a troubling one because they don't really have anybody who does what he does. So you have to change their offense pretty drastically, not just the running game, but also in the passing game because he's such a dual threat. And, you know, they're talking about getting him 20 to 25 touches a game, sometimes even 30 in some games. And trying to basically 40% of your offense. So to me, it's a huge thing that they lose David Johnson for any length of time, and they're going to have to make some very, very drastic adjustments. Now, unfortunately, they've got a set of receivers that they can do that with, but Carson Palmer wasn't exactly great throwing the ball on Sunday, so they're going to need some pretty drastic fixes to their offense pretty quickly.
I'll go right to that situation in Cincinnati that we saw with Andy Dalton, a home game, Jason. How do they crap the bed that horribly on offense in Cincy?
Well, I think that if you look at a lot of teams, you know, a lot of teams were really bad offensively in the opening week because I think this is the result of, again, not that much practice time, not that much hitting, and people and teams have their time off. And I think Cincinnati is the greatest example of that because not only do you have the practice issue, but you have massive changes along the offensive line this year. You know, they lost Whitworth. They lost the guard. They've had made some very significant alterations to what they do. And all of that affected Andy Dalton. He wasn't ready to deal with it. And he showed his limitations in this game very drastically, which is one of the reasons why they wanted to keep A.J. McCarron so badly. Not because A.J. McCarron necessarily is the answer, you know, and is the long-term solution, but he is at least a good stopgap in case you say, okay, Dalton's not the answer and we don't want to continue with this contract. Let's get out from underneath this contract and let's go with somebody who's at least a passable starter until we get that next guy.
How concerned are you with the Patriots' defense for this season?
Very concerned. I mean, they don't have any pass rushers. You know, Trey Flowers, but then they have to, you know, fake it quite a bit beyond Trey Flowers. And so, look, I know that they use the first three or four games to get themselves ready for the stretch drive, but when you open with that bad a performance, and again, you know, Kansas City is a quality opponent, you know, obviously with Kareem Hunt and with Tyreek Hill, you know, they've got some serious playmakers. And, you know, I thought the Patriots did a good job trying to, you know, contain Travis Kelce, but that allowed everybody else to dominate that game. So I'm concerned because I don't think their personnel in the front seven is all that great, especially if Hightower is not at full speed. So, yeah, I would be very worried about them. Now, they're going to score some points, and that's going to help them cover for it. But they, you know, when they didn't score early in that game, like when they didn't get that Gronkowski touchdown to make it 14-0, that really changed the way that game played out in a drastic way.
Jason, people are raving about their defense, and they got a quarterback, if he's healthy, can make something out of nothing. So many people are so high on the Seattle Seahawks, but after seeing that O-line on display in week one, how can you put a lot of faith in a team with an O-line that bad?
You can't. I mean, look, they don't move the ball very consistently. They had, like, three drives where you said, okay, this looks reasonable. Yeah, they've got problems. and they're going to put a lot of undue stress on their defense. And this is the reason why so many guys on that defense are so upset, because there's so much stress being put on that defense because they don't have a good offense to put them in better positions. And so I see this as a really bad situation that's going to get only going to get worse as the season progresses.
Jason, your thoughts on the Minnesota Vikings and their defense, but Sam Bradford, I thought, had a really good game. Dalvin Cook looks like the real deal. Are they a Super Bowl contender, not just based on the first week, but with all the pieces they have in place there?
I like that team. I do still worry about the offensive line. And I know it was good on Monday night. They played well, but that New Orleans team didn't exactly come to challenge defensively, right? And Bradford has his way of getting the ball out of his hands. Obviously, Dalvin Cook makes them a much more reasonable offense. You know, they've got a real threat in the backfield, and that helps make guys like Stephon Diggs a little bit stronger, look a little stronger than they actually are. So I think, look, if they can stay healthy, but if they lose anybody, like, they just don't have the depth to make up for a loss of a player here or a player there. It's the same kind of thing that they went through last year. You know, they lost Adrian Peterson. Everything fell apart with that offense. And then, you know, and on top of that, it just got worse and worse as the offensive line injuries piled up. So to me, like, if they're healthy, if Dalvin Cook is back there and providing some kind of threat, and then they got Latavius Murray eventually to give them a little bit of power in their game, then I think they're okay. But I think they're holding it together sort of with bailing wire and string, which, again, is not like unlike a lot of teams out there, but I think is especially true in the case of the Vikings right now.
Your thoughts on what Jacksonville accomplished over the weekend against Houston?
They gave Dwayne Brown a tremendous amount of leverage, the left tackle from Houston. They made him a lot of money. Dwayne Brown should send gifts to every one of the Jacksonville Jaguar defensive linemen and say thank you, because I just got millions and millions in my pocket because of you guys. I mean, look, that Houston offensive line was atrocious. Their quarterback play was terrible as a result. I mean, if your quarterback's getting hit every other play, you know, how can you expect them to perform in any way, shape, or form? So they need to get Dwayne Brown, and that's just one step in fixing five spots. But they were horrible. And so give Jacksonville a lot of credit. They came in and they tore apart Houston. I'm still waiting a little bit on Jacksonville to see if this is for real or not. But, look, they played tough football, which is what you would expect out of a Tom Coughlin, and let's not say coached team, but a Tom Coughlin-managed team. Because certainly Tom Coughlin and Doug Marrone are – you know, it's mostly Tom Coughlin are setting the standard for what they expect there.
Jason Cole from the Bleacher Report talking some NFL with us today on The Big Show, TSN 1290, 42 minutes past the hour. Given the latest news as of yesterday with the NFL, do you think Ezekiel Elliott plays the entire regular season?
Nah, 50-50. I mean, 50-50 at best. I mean, if they say we're not going to give you an expedited hearing that he plays the entire season, if they give him an expedited hearing, then yes, it's going to be a problem for him, because that's his circuit court in Texas is one of the most conservative courts in the land, and they will side eventually with what the collective bargaining agreement says, whether they think it's fair or not. They're going to honor what the agreement says, and so eventually he's going to lose. That's just a matter of at what point that is. It's whether that's in 3 weeks or whether that's in, you know, in 500 days, he's going to lose this one, and the NFL is going to get the ability to enforce their penalties as they wish. So it's a matter of whether the court decides to give them the expedited hearing or not.
Are you, after this weekend here, if Jared Goff was a stock, are you buying?
No. I mean, he did a nice job against a team that's terrible right now. Like, they just can't play. And, you know, if you look at that game statistically, he didn't do anything that you would think he should do, and their running game wasn't very good either. And this was a game where basically the Colts threw up all over their shoes and, you know, couldn't. If the Rams didn't win that game easily, you would have said there's a problem with the Rams. So, you know, he did fine, and you wouldn't say, okay, this is great, but I'm not saying it's awesome, but I'm also not, you know, I'm not trying to downplay it too much. He did what he was expected to do, given the circumstances.
Jason, what's the latest down in Florida with the weather and everything that's going on? We wish you all the best and everybody else down there as well. But Chicago goes to Tampa Bay this weekend. Is everything going to be okay with the games?
They're going to play. Yeah, they're going to play that game. So the NFL announced that this morning that they're going to play that game as scheduled. And they expect to have the cleanup in Tampa done by that time. Obviously, the Dolphins are on the road this week. Jacksonville should be okay as well, even though they took some, you know, they took some damage, a little bit of damage to Jacksonville, but not enough to not allow them to play. So I think everything is going to be fine at this point in time. You know, we personally lost some power, but everything else is fine.
Odell Beckham Jr. has come out and said he's going to be the highest paid player in the NFL. Is he about to get paid like a quarterback, Jason?
No. No. Look, and nor, if you had control over a player for 3 years at, you know, what is it going to be between what he makes this year and the next 2 years? They control him for about $26 million over the next 3 years, this year and the next two, right? I get that he wants to be the highest paid player in the league, but he doesn't have the leverage. Because they can sit there and say, you know, we love you, Odell, but we're only going to pay you $12 or $13 million a year. You're worth every bit of it, and we want to pay you long term, but we can franchise you for a lot less money than what you think you're worth. And if you choose to sit out, that's fine, but there's no way you're going from making $13 million a year to making $20-plus million a year. That's just not happening. We're not going to reset the market for wide receivers that way. Even though he could have, he has a reasonable argument to say, "Look, this offense is terrible without me. It's not so terrible that they can't get by without paying a whole lot less."
Finally, this week, Jason, can Alex Smith have a career year with this Chiefs team, or was Monday or Thursday night just an outlier, and he'll continue to do what he's done his whole career?
Well, I mean, he can have a career year if teams decide that they're going to let Tyreek Hill run free. Like, you know, Stephon Gilmore and Devin McCourty decided not to cover Tyreek Hill. I mean, I could probably have a career year, too. But I don't expect that to happen on a regular basis. I will say this. I was impressed with how aggressive they were throwing the ball down the field. And they need to do more of that. He's still not a great downfield thrower. But they've got to take advantage of Hill. They've got to show that they've got real threats there. Because if they can show that they've got real threats and that they're willing to take those chances, then all of a sudden Travis Kelce becomes even better in the middle of the field and could have an explosive year at tight end if he's able to stay healthy. So I really like what they did. Obviously, you know, New England had some problems defensively. They made some mistakes that you wouldn't expect a team to make, such as on the Tyreek Hill touchdown. But I thought that Alex Smith, you know, I think he knows the situation and is sitting there going, I'm going to make the most out of this. I'm going to play really, really well. I'm going to be aggressive with the ball. I'm going to take my shots with this. And then we'll see how this plays out at the end of the year, whether that's, you know, Kansas City letting me go and going with Mahomes or, you know, Kansas City saying we can't let this guy go in any way, shape, or form.
Great stuff, Jason. As always, love the insight and enjoy the rest of your week.
All right, guys. Take care. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Jason.
Jason Cole, the Bleacher Report, talking some NFL with us as we head into week two. Thursday nighter, Houston and
Cincy. Yeah, that's just, boy, you look at week one and you wonder what kind of debacle that might be. I really wonder how many points the Saints are going to put up at home over the Patriots with that defense this week.
I love the broadcast last night where they just kept talking about, you know, there's an angry man coming to town. His name is Tom Brady. This defense doesn't look good in Minnesota. It's actually going to be an interesting game to watch. And Drew Brees, like, what do you do with him as a contract? 38 years old, still looked good last night, but just not a very good team. And when we talk about money spent, we talked about with Drew Stafford, and he's still in his prime, I would say. Matt Stafford, what do you do with Drew Brees? Do you give him the money at 38? Because there's so many things, as we talked about, that team needs.
I'm not sure what you do with that contract, but I think the Saints are going to put up a bunch of points on the Patriots at home in that dome. And I think it makes for a scary situation here.
That smells like a six-pack pick coming up.
You know, there's a lot of quarterbacks that rework their deals to help their teams out, and I don't think enough people get on Drew Brees for not reworking what is a ridiculous amount of money that he's being paid at the age that he's at right now.
We'll take a break and tee up the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, when we come back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca with Jim Cholk, Troy Westford, Brandon Ruicki, and your chance to weigh in. An hour of your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. And you can also text us your thoughts at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers, 8-3 on the bye. Are they legitimate Grey Cup contenders? Do you believe they can win the Grey Cup this year? Are they one of the top teams that could win this year's Holy Grail?
There's zero question that they're one of the top teams in the CFL. If you think otherwise, and that you're out to lunch. They're not there with Calgary. Calgary sits alone atop the CFL mountain, looking down upon everyone. No question about that. And it would take some acts by the football gods, all kinds of turnovers, and some good fortune come Western Final to topple Calgary. But, hey, whatever mix you think the top four teams are, Calgary, and after that, Winnipeg, Edmonton, Saskatchewan, however that jumbles up, there's zero doubt that they are a Grey Cup contending team.
Yeah, I don't think it's a debate anymore. When you're second in the league, how are you not a Grey Cup contender? I guess the only argument you could make is that the Bombers just are physically unable to beat Calgary.
Which is, it's not a best of seven in football. Yep. It's a one-game, four-quarter situation, and we all know anything can happen.
And even, you know, I don't know what the odds might be, but even if they were 95-5, you know, the Bombers still would have a chance. It's not like they're so insanely outmatched that they would never be able to beat. Like, it's not like we're talking Hamilton versus the Stampeders here.
They wouldn't even – I don't think that Calgary would be 10. In that game, what would they be? Maybe 7.5-point favorite?
I would say
like
I would said 10, but –
yeah, and I don't know if they'd get as high as 10. And hey, how many times – it wouldn't be an impossible feat. They would need some good things to happen, but it wouldn't be impossible, that's for sure.
Do you feel the Bombers are a legitimate Grey Cup contending team and could beat Calgary and go on and win the Grey Cup this year? 780-1290, we talked about the Vikings as well, given what you saw last night, albeit against the Saints. Do you think they're a legitimate Super Bowl contender? And Kevin Cheveldayoff, in conversation with Bob McKenzie, he talked about patience with the process, how the Jets can improve goaltending injuries, Kulikov and Mr. Trouba, saying that Trouba, along with Morrissey and Little, there have been talks with the representatives now that you can extend these players after the summer, that there have been talks. Your thoughts on Kevin Cheveldayoff's comments and training camp. Once again, what are the storylines you're looking for? This year's training camp starts Saturday at Bell MTS Iceplex. Anything and everything on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Your call's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
And back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki with you on this Tuesday morning. Going to be gorgeous. 32 degrees is a high, 16 is a low, sunny. No chance of precipitation today. As a beautiful summer day in the start of fall. Boss Pizza fan line, taking your thoughts on many things, 780-1290, as well as text us your thoughts at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. And we welcome into the program, Rick. You're kicking us off today. Go ahead, sir.
Morning, boys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good show this morning.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, and not that that's an anomaly or anything. They're always good shows.
Hey, they're not all going to be diamonds. We understand that.
That's right. But, yeah, you guys are usually pretty close to diamond anyways. In the process of forming anyways, right, mate? Coal turns to diamond, doesn't it?
Yes, that's what I was trying to reference.
Okay.
But you made a better point of it doing it for sure, Rick.
Anyways.
Yeah, go ahead. What do you got for us?
Well, I want to touch on the Bombers and then talk about our beloved Jets.
Okay.
I think the Bombers are a legit Grey Cup contender. I mean, they need to do one thing, and one thing basically only, I think, to really solidify that, and that's just stop giving up. Like, find a way to stop giving up those big plays, right? It kills them. They play, you know, even not bad defense, but they have a brain fart or something happens or just have coverage. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but they give up way too many big plays. They could figure that out. They're legit. And then about our Jets, well, you know, I think I agree with the consensuses on the show that, I mean, it's going to be the big guy's got to play $7.6 million worth this year, whatever that means. So, but that's for, you know, a different topic. But I think you know what we mean. He's got to play better. With Trouba, well, I've always said, I've phoned in here quite a number of times, I don't think he wants to play here, and whether that's informed, not, or a little bit of both, I don't know. Well, I do know, but I don't think he wants to be here, and I think that on the ice, to his credit, he's done nothing, you know, to make it seem like, I mean, he gives 120%, there's no doubt, he's our best defenseman. But, you know, what he should be is the face of the almost the franchise already, along with Mark Scheifele. He should be having a golf tournament here and stuff, and you just don't see that. And so, you know, not to point fingers and stuff, but I don't, and you know, when you listen to inflections in people's voices and stuff, and I kind of pride myself at being able to do that, Chevy almost broke script there a little bit when they asked him, and not specifically about the other ones, but about Trouba, and you know, he kind of had to reload a little bit in his own mind, and I thought I heard that, and I'm positive I don't think he really wants to play here, and if that's the case, you know, moving him is the smart move, and it's just a matter of when, but if you can get a stud on the left side, and like, say, for example, you know, these kooky scenarios, like these armchair GMs like me, but say he doesn't want to play here, and you can move him to Carolina for Noah Hanifin and a first-round pick, I think you do that today.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the issue. That's not happening, though. Like,
well, I know it's not. And hey, we could. I hope I'm 1,050% wrong, because I mean, this kid could lead us to the promised land. I mean, when you Scheifele, Laine, and Trouba, and let's even just say, I'm going to say Comrie and goal one day are going to win us a Stanley Cup.
Well, here's the thing, I'll go back to my thoughts on this. I honestly, if they are talking extension, and Kevin Cheveldayoff told Bob McKenzie that he's talked to representatives of him and everybody else on the team that is an upcoming UFA or RFA, I don't understand why Jacob Trouba doesn't sign, even if he still wants out and still says, you know, trade me. He's losing money. If he's going to get an 8-year deal, whether it's here or somewhere else, the money's going to be there. So if he's going to play out this year's contract and then they're not going to trade him and they have control for him and he goes to arbitration, he's going to get a little bit more if he has another good season in the next bridge deal. But it's not going to be that max what he could be making. And maybe the Jets aren't offering that just because it doesn't fit in the cap this year and maybe they haven't stepped up yet and are hoping to do it in the next 2 years of control for him. But from his standpoint, whether it's here or there, the only difference in the money to me is whether he gets it this year, next year, or 3 years from now when they do move him. He's losing money in my mind.
Trouba is by doing what?
By not signing an 8-year deal. Because if, say he goes to Carolina, he's going to get the 8-year, whatever it is, whatever those guys are getting. If it's PK Subban or Shea Weber, whatever money, he's going to get $8-9 million a year. Say it's $9 million a year. So if he plays another year and makes what he's going to make, and then he signs another bridge deal, albeit probably for another mill or two more than he is this year, he's still not making what he could be if he signed an 8-year extension. And so in my mind, I don't think it's about money. I think it's about term and if he wants to be here. So why doesn't he sign and still keep asking for a trade and just make the money?
Well, it's not about term, and you keep saying that, like you've been saying this for a long time, sign it and then get them to trade you somewhere, but No one's going to do that, JT. You're going to sign a deal and put your faith in an organization that they're going to trade you when it fits them best. When you in 3 years from now, like you're going to leave it up to them to move you if that's super important to you. Instead of going, hey man, I got 3 more years until I'm 7 years here and out.
How is it any different than Evander Kane? How is it any different than Evander Kane signing for $6 million a year while in the process and continuing for 2 years after he signed, asking for a trade?
Because if Evander Kane wasn't an a-hole, then who knows when the Jets ever would have traded him. And if you are absolute dead, I want out of here, I got to be out of here for all the reasons that we hear with regard to Trouba. He's got, you know, instead of waiting the rest of his life to get traded, he's ultimately got the hammer of 7 years served and UFA gone.
Now, I will add this, that it doesn't fit this year. Like if he, but I mean, it would because he's under contract. You have the extension kick in next after this season.
Yeah, I just, what would be the incentive for the Jets to trade him if he signed a long-term deal? Zero.
Well,
we have a number one defenseman on our team for the next however many years that extension is. So if you're Trouba and you're dealing with kind of as close as you can get to certainties here, the only way you know you're getting out for sure is by waiting until that 3 years of team control comes to an end and you can hit free agency. If you sign that contract, you're giving up your last bit of leverage and your last bit of really true self-control in finding a new destination for yourself, right?
Well, you could hold out again.
Yeah, but if the team still holds you, right?
I've signed this. I've asked you for 3 straight years now, even prior to signing this, to trade me. It's been 3 years. I'm not reporting until you do.
Nobody's going to. You're not going to do that with the situation when you have.
He's already done
UFA.
It.
Not the way you've got it all lined up, man.
Well, in the meantime, he makes $5 million more a year till he does hold out. Like, to me, the only answer is the reason he wouldn't, if it's being offered, is because he doesn't want to be here.
He knows damn well he signs a 2-year coming into here with the arbitration. You're going to get awarded whatever the arbitrator says, probably, and then you've got 2 years there knowing damn well the Jets aren't going to hold on to you for the next 2 years. So he ends up probably getting traded next year once he comes to the arbitration, or you go the year after that at the very most.
What's going to change in a year when he goes into this? Like, if there's not a deal now, where's there going to be a deal?
I think the only thing the Jets are going to be forced to have to make a deal, man, or he walks.
Or you hope that the Jets have a great season and they have a solid little playoff run. And maybe the success of the team changes his mind. Because if he doesn't like the destination that he's in, that's the only way you're going to go about this is, look, man, like if you stay here, we're going on playoff runs every single year. You can't guarantee that going to whatever else team that we could potentially move you to. That's the only chip that the Jets, I think, can really hold in their favor here is the 8 years and the potential success of this team is if they have a big year this year.
Which means that chip doesn't hold much, though, if the whatever it is at home driving them to go and be in the States, like that can get nullified in a hurry. But, hey, man, the next contract that's signed, every second that goes by, you're just getting closer to him walking for nothing. So all that supposed power that the Jets have dwindles once the next contract's signed, and he's starting to get closer and closer to walking as UFA.
But here's the other side of it, and this is the Big Show on TSN 1290 if you want to weigh in on the conversation, 780-1290 on the Boston Pizza fan line. We say as he gets closer, the less you're going to get, but what if he gets better this year? And then what if he does have to sign a bridge and he gets better the year after that? Aren't you actually maximizing what you could get for him then if there's not a deal there now and you're asking for whatever and there's no deal there? I don't see why you're getting closer to not getting as much. I think you're getting closer to, if you honestly believe in him, you're getting closer to maximizing it. The more he goes towards free agency, the better he gets, the more you're going to get for him.
I suppose so, but there's the other force at the other end of it, JT, where the time runs out and he walks for nothing. So those two things are kind of at war with one another and on a crash course as the time keeps ticking. And it gets harder. The specifications, especially early on, of what they were looking for, basically wanting to trade and get a left shot Jacob Trouba, right? Someone that's disgruntled and all the rest. Like, the for the thing to work out in what they wanted back for Jacob Trouba the first time around, that there's, I don't know how you create that situation. How that, like, what you're going to get back from him, how it's going to fit into the organization. It's just the whole thing is tricky, and Trouba and his representation hold a lot of power here.
And to your point, that's why I think the move has to happen after this season, where Trouba will play hopefully all 82, likely in that number one defensive pairing, and then you have to decide what the future holds. Are you staying here 8 years? Or are you? Or is getting out your number one priority? Because if you have a guy under control for 2 years, which whatever team would that gets his rights, you can give up a pretty big package for that still. And even, you know, not even totally committing to that long-term deal, knowing that you got a number one guy for two full seasons, like you're still willing to give up a pretty hefty price for that. If it's just the 1 year after that, that's when you get into that diminishing set of returns coming back. So I think, after this season, the Jets need to make it hardline and just figure it out 100%. And once they figure it out, they need to act extremely quickly in the offseason.
This is just coming in from Brett Wallace, our TSN Ottawa reporter, that Marcel Desjardins, the GM of the Ottawa Redblacks, confirms Trevor Harris suffered a second-degree AC joint shoulder sprain, says Harris is going on the six-game injury list and that he could be out anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks, so most likely Drew Tate will be the starting quarterback when the Bombers come off the bye and host the Redblacks on September 22nd. Boss Pizza Fan Line is open if you wish to weigh in on the conversation and everything we're talking about. Also getting some tweets about it at Jim Till Sports, at Troy Westwood, at Brandon_Rewicki. We'll be back with your thoughts on this and anything else you wish to discuss on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Your calls. Larry, you're on The Big Show. Go ahead, sir.
How are you this morning, gentlemen?
Good. And yourself?
Not too bad. I have a very simple question. We've been constantly hearing about how poor the Jets' goaltending has been or their defensive lapses, yet we never hear any discussion about the only two holdover coaches, Flaherty and Huddy, goaltending and defense. Everybody else has changed, but not those two. Are they not the part of the problem?
Well, we've talked about them extensively, especially all throughout last year and I believe the year prior on this program.
But no one seems to want to do anything about it.
Well, we get into this. This is how I know we've talked about it, because we're all uncertain of exactly what their roles are. Defensive zone systems aren't on Charlie Huddy. How an individual defenseman improves is on Charlie Huddy. The system that Charlie Huddy is coaching is given out by the head coach. The goaltending coach, from what I understand, and we've had Jamie McLennan on to discuss what he does, basically during the season is just, you know, running through some things that they want to work on or whatever they're having issues with. We've had some goaltending experts on the station, not only The Big Show, but some other shows here on TSN 1290 that have talked extensively about how in season it's very, very difficult to get a goaltender to change anything mid-season. These are things they work on in the off-season, to the point of where some experts, I forget which one it was, if you guys remember that, talked about Hellebuck's glove hand and how they tried to work in season on getting it higher and how difficult that was. But they were giving Flaherty some credit for actually, as the season wore on down the stretch and Hellebuck got better at it, that he said that's so difficult to do. And he was giving Flaherty some kudos for actually working with him in midseason and getting Hellebuck's glove hand up higher and working better. So when it's not that nobody ever talks about it. We talk about it a lot. We just haven't recently. But those are the things that sort of I feel and we've deducted on the responsibilities of who it lies on. I think that if these things need to be changed, that falls on the head coach.
Yeah, for sure with the Huddy thing. And I get a little bit of a kick out of people, you know, I guess seeing the train wreck that Andre Pavlik was in net and then with Hellebuck, and this is before even last year with Hellebuck. Hellebuck has an off year last year, and everyone calling for the head, or a lot of people at Flaherty and that sort of thing. As a when you're a, an athlete like that, there's a little tweaking, like what Jim's talking about, little tweaking that is involved with a position coach like that, right? Like no kicking coach I ever had would be responsible for me kicking poorly. Right, I'm going to come into a situation and have strengths and weaknesses, and he can either help me to make my weaknesses better or not, but that's ultimately on me. So, like, Pavlik owns what he did. Hellebuck owns what he has done. And really, when you're talking about one single season, Hellebuck being a little bit under the hoped level of achievement, there's not a – I don't see the space or the room for a whole pile of criticism of what we've seen from Flaherty in these situations.
It's just – it's a thought. It just disturbs me that nothing has changed with the goaltending in 6 years, and nothing has changed with our defense of any significance in 6 years, but we have the same two people in charge.
Well, and that's my point, I guess, is they're not in charge. They're doing what the head coach tells them. I mean, here's the other...
Specifically Huddy, more so.
Here's the other thing I'll say about Charlie Huddy. Like, to me, it's individual development that the defensive coach, other than running the pairings, is responsible for. And do you not think Jacob Trouba, Josh Morrissey, I don't know about Toby Enstrom, Myers, Bufflin, all the guys that have come along, if you've seen some improvement in their game or development? So I'm not defending them. I'm just saying, like, I don't think their role is as big or responsible for the overall defensive play of a team than it is on the individuals per se. But it's something we do hear a lot about, Larry. Like, we've been hearing about some changes in some of the coaching staff for as long as I've been here. All right. Thanks, Larry. We'll get to more of your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Ryan, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How's it going this morning?
Good, thanks.
Good to hear. I'm talking about Trouba tonight, or today.
Yeah.
Trouba is the Jets' best defenseman, right? And he's on the rise. He's not declining like Myers or Bufflin. So what I'm saying is they should keep him for this year, see how he is, and see how Bufflin is. And if Bufflin was playing like he was this year, maybe try and promise Trouba, like, hey, like, we want you. Here's what we're offering you. And Bufflin's going down. Maybe talk about getting rid of one of the other big two right defensemen, because in the Jets system, all they have is just great young prospects for defense.
So you would try to work on keeping Trouba and moving one of the other guys as opposed to moving him. I don't think the Jets want to move Trouba. I think it's Trouba that is the one. Like,
They don't want to move him.
I don't think they're looking to move a defenseman. I think the issue about moving one comes up because one of them wants out or did want out.
Specifically Trouba. Of course the Jets don't want to move Trouba. And by all indications, and just time and time again, I'm hearing it from those close to the team or like, it's just nonstop that Trouba ultimately wants out of here. That's the bottom line. That a family situation wants to be in the States. So we're going to, you know, he said all the right things before and has calmed everything down. He's playing at a high level. We can just enjoy him while he's here and hope a miracle happens and there's some big long-term commitment made by him here. But don't be surprised if it doesn't happen. And they don't want to move him, but he may be pushing that to happen.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Ryan. We appreciate it. 780-1290. We'll get to Jay before we have to take a break. Go ahead, Jay.
How you doing, guys?
Good, you?
Not too bad. Just a few observations here. Just watching the first weekend of the NFL, I really wish that they'd have the ability to challenge, like in the CFL, with the pass interference calls, because there were so many that were called that weren't, or that weren't called that should have been, and it was just kind of ruined some of the games as far as letting teams back into games they had no business being in. As far as the Trouba thing goes, I mean, I fully believe he wants out. A lot of these young guys now, they would have signed the 8-year deal already if he wanted to stay. I think the Jets' only hope is that he meets a fine Winnipeg young girl here and wants to stay or something like that in the next year. But if he doesn't sign in the next few months, I think it's the writing on the wall, and we just have to do the best we can and to get what we can get for him. And one observation at the Banjo Bowl, other than it really bugged me, other than the two crap zone defensive plays that got burned us again, I wish we'd stop playing that, is Deering O Canada. I don't know if you guys noticed, but half the concourse stopped like they're supposed to and stood still like you're supposed to for the national anthem, but there were still thousands of people walking around or people talking and being loud or whatever, and I thought it was just embarrassing. Come on, Winnipeg, be classy. When the national anthem's on, stand still and listen to the song.
All right, we'll touch on those when we come back. Jay, we have to break, but we'll take that and more of your calls when we can return to the Big Show, 780-1290 on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. And just a quick heads up here, I'll be attending, along with Chris Walby and some other Bomber alumni, the 7th Annual Bodker Charity Golf Tournament tomorrow in support of Habitat for Humanity, Manitoba. It's tomorrow at Pine Ridge Golf Club, 12 noon shotgun start, still some space for singles. And teams, if you want to get involved, you go to bodkergolftour.com, bodkergolftour.com. Whole prizes, raffle, silent auction, lunch, dinner, all the great things, and celebrity golfers, including Mr. Chris Walby and some Bomber vets. So should be a good time if you want to join us for that. Back to Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 if you want to weigh in. And just touching on Jay's point, NFL pass interference review. Given what's gone on with the CFL, would you like to see that?
There was talk about that last year, and who was it? Richard Sherman on, I can't remember the play.
On Julio Jones.
Yes, it was a huge play and a grossly missed infraction there. Would I like to see it? You know, I'm at a point now where I don't mind. I will absorb and accept the human element of error on those types of situations, I believe. I think that's where I stand right now, though. I like all of the scoring plays being reviewed, and I think in both leagues, in NHL and our football, CFL, NFL, that's what I'd like to see. But as far as plays being missed by officials, I'm okay with the human error element.
I thought the PI review would be a great thing for football, and could not have been more wrong. I hate it. I think it's awful. And you know what? Half the time, they don't even get the call right anyways.
Yeah.
When they do go to review. So I understand the insane frustration of watching some of the blow. Like the Packers-Seahawks game was an example of just atrocious officiate, where I think it was Davante Adams literally got tackled as he was about to make a reception. And then Jimmy Graham was basically pushed into the first row of Lambeau as he tried to catch a pass. Like, so there's going to be just brutal calls, but I don't like the review process, and I don't like the chintzy review calls late in the game where you're throwing up a Hail Mary challenge flag just because your team failed to convert on fourth down. And like, the whole thing, it just didn't work. You tried it, which was fine. It didn't work, though. Same thing with the offsides in the NHL. That's something that I think you tried it. It made sense on the surface, but ultimately just doesn't work.
You know, one thing I've really liked, like, I want to take the challenges away from the coaches. It was in the Alabama-Florida State game, and it was in another football game. It might have been the CFL, where something happened. It was reviewed from the command center. There wasn't the officials even. It wasn't the coaches, nothing like that. It was and something they were concerned with, wanted to get it right. It took a minute or two to get, and both were done and done correctly. That's what I would like to see. If something is noticed on the field and they want to correct it, self-correct it almost in a quick manner like that, I'm all cool with that. But specifically, it's the coaches' challenge to me that I think absolutely suck.
Even last night's Monday Nighter in Denver saw Keenan Allen get pass interfered like 10, 12 yards downfield, and Philip Rivers lost his mind. And Keenan Allen was just like it was so obvious that he didn't lose his mind. He was just like literally going, like, are you kidding me? You did not see that hold? So I don't know. Like, I like the idea of it. I don't like the way it delays. And you know what I don't like also is that the limit to it I get because of the pacing of the game. I hate the slow pacing of the game and how it slows it down. But yet I don't know how you limit it because, you know, say you're out of challenges. If you're a DB, then it's free reign. in my mind to just go.
You still got to slip it by the refs.
Well, I understand that, but you're going to probably have a different mindset than if you do if they can still.
I don't believe that because I think that everybody on the field knows the refs get it right way more than 90% of the time, right?
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that, if the NFL should bring it in or not. And then standing for the ovation, I was on the concourse, actually, and when the anthem started at the Banjo Bowl and stopped and took my hat off and just stood in the middle of the concourse while the anthem played, and the majority of the people around me did so.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because that's the way it is, right? People, it doesn't matter what sporting your event, at the vast majority, well, the second you hear the anthem, there might be a little bit of a delay to sort of gather yourself, but basically that's an immediate reaction to stand at attention, so it sounds a little bit strange.
I give the benefit of the doubt, though, if people are just arriving and they're not listening and they're not aware, they're in conversation, they don't know the anthem, but most people I saw... And the one or two that I didn't or that didn't stop, they clearly were like they were on their phone and they weren't paying attention and just didn't know. I don't think it's out of disrespect, although I get how most people should, if you are aware, stop for the anthem, even if you're on the concourse. Thanks for the call, Jay. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Julian.
Julian, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
How are you guys doing? Good, good. Hey, so you guys just touching on that review thing,
yes.
Something that it might help, but I've been thinking about this for a little bit, is that TSN doesn't really use the like the zipper line camera, the one that goes kind of behind the quarterback. You can get those really great shots. The NFL uses it in every game, and the CFL uses it like the Grey Cup and like a handful of other games during the year, which is always confusing to me. I feel like they should use it more often, but that might help at least. So the CFL with reviews get a couple better camera angles these days.
Yeah, which costs money, right? Like that's a huge issue. There's been a couple of reviewed, I'll put in quotations, plays from the CFL where it's like you can't really tell anything
because goal line reviews,
they don't have the cameras right. Yeah,
but yeah, that zip line camera I know is extremely expensive to run. Extremely expensive to put in and install in every stadium.
Okay, well that makes sense. I mean, but it's one of those things where it's like, obviously, I get it for the great guys.
Yeah, Julian, you're just cutting out there. But, I mean, it's a great thought. I often wonder in the CFL some of the reviews that, especially the goal line ones, there's not a camera on the goal line. Like, it's at that slight angle.
Just kind
of
kooky, right?
Yeah, it's weird, too. It's not a bad idea, though. I'm sure if the CFL could afford it, they would do it for sure. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Chris.
Chris, you're on the big show, sir. Go ahead.
How's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good. I want to talk about the sweet science.
Okay.
We've got one of the greatest fights possibly of the last couple decades coming up this Saturday. Yep. Gennady Golovkin versus Canelo Alvarez. These two are monsters. One has a 33 knockout record, 37-0, that's Golovkin. And Alvarez is 47-1-1 with a 34 knockout record. It's going to be a slugfest. I just wanted to send some promotion and love that way. I'm a huge, huge fan.
Who do you have in the bout?
Golovkin.
Golovkin, okay.
Yeah, it's going to be a beauty. If you love boxing and you know you watch this sport and just sort of the direction it's traveling, and you wonder how many fights of this magnitude you're going to get. And like he was saying, Canelo Alvarez, 49-1-1 with 34 knockouts against Triple G, 37-0-0, 33 knockouts. Like this is
big time.
This is remarkable. And you just kind of wonder with this day and age of boxing and where it's at, it may be a long time, if ever, that you see a fight of this magnitude come around again.
Yeah, but too much focus on the actual fight itself, which is why nobody's talking about it. It's crazy that like people are mentioning this as, you know, maybe the first time since Hagler Hearns that you'll get kind of an exhibition of mano y mano. Let's go at it until one of us is back down on the canvas. I've always been more of a fan of the middleweight fights anyways over the heavyweight. Like I love the faster, speedier guys, but still have a bunch of power. So, like this should be what everybody was tuning into a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
Instead of, you know, with the Mayweather fight, this is the one that everybody should have been talking and focusing on.
He asked me what we wanted for my birthday's coming up. I said a pay-per-view party with Golovkin and Alvarez fight, and the whole family's getting together. We're gonna promote this.
That's awesome.
And then you said we want to invite the big show, Jim, Troy, and Brandon, to come over and enjoy free food and the fight itself.
Absolutely. You guys are invited.
Hey, Chris, have a very happy birthday, and I'm with you. I'm a big fan of the Sweet Science, and I couldn't think of a better way to spend a birthday than watching a big-time fight like this.
Great. Go Golovkin.
Thanks, Chris. Take care, man.
Happy birthday, Chris. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. We'll get some tweets in. We were asking about if you think, the Trouba stuff, and then, of course, if the Bombers are a legitimate Grey Cup contender. Miles says, Stamps lost Grey Cup to sub-500 team. They're beatable in a one-game shot, which was Troy's point for sure. Yoshibaba, it's been a while, but closer to he gets to free agency, though, the less other teams want to give up for him, even if he improves, as in Trouba, because there's no guarantee he signs with that team he gets traded to, i.e. why wouldn't they just wait that last year, give nothing up, and just try to sign him after that? Well, the weight in difference in that is because you might not be able to sign him. So, but I get what you're saying. I'm not saying wait till the trade deadline of 3 years from now. But I'm saying 2 years from now, even in the offseason, I think you could get a lot more for him if he continues to improve. Ryan Smith says, morning, this season could be a big factor in getting Trouba to sign. If they go to the playoffs and make some noise, would he be more willing to stay? I don't really know if that's what it is. He says he wants to stay. And take that for what it is. I know Rick Ralph on the afternoon ride here on TSN 1290 is a big believer that he doesn't believe that maybe that's off the table, the no trade. But I don't know. Like, I don't say the Jets make the playoffs, go to the second round, and they look to even get better next year. Do you think that changes his mind on what he really wants?
No, I don't. I don't think so. From what I've heard, it just doesn't matter whatsoever what happens with the Winnipeg Jets. It has nothing to do with the Winnipeg Jets. It has everything to do with a personal thing that he will be down south.
I think it gives you a chance because, you know, as much as you may, like, as much as if it is moving down south is priority number one, you know, obviously contending doesn't change that, right? But if you feel like, man, we can really win this.
You're part of something special.
Right? Like, if we can really get there right away, like, that might, it might just create enough of a thought in your head to maybe think, you know what? I could spend my summers wherever I want. And if you're buddies with the guys on the team and you love the lock, like it at least creates a little bit of doubt, I think, is the very. But I agree with, you know, generally where if you want to live somewhere else, there's not really a whole lot that can be changed despite how good your team might be.
And Nick says standing at attention for the anthem is basic manners, like please and thank you. I agree with that, Nick. I don't think anyone was not standing for it. I think what I believe it was Jay who said, just people on the concourse getting to the game late when the anthem started weren't stopping, removing hats, and standing at attention while it was on. They were still hurrying to try and get to their seats. I didn't see anybody sitting during the anthem, fan-wise, at the Banjo Bowl. Anyways, if you want to weigh in on the conversations, by all means do so, 780-1290 on the Boss Pizza fan line, or give us a call or give us a text at TS at 1290-90.
That whole move your hat thing, why do people move their hats?
During the anthem?
Yeah.
I just think it's a sign of respect.
I don't know why. Oh, okay, sorry. I thought
that's an honest question. I don't know why.
Yeah, I think it's just a sign of respect, like similar to taking your hat off when you go indoors, generally.
Yes.
It's just, yeah, which, yeah. Well,
yeah.
Which
I don't know. I don't know the exact reasoning for it. It's just kind of one of those, I guess, customs.
It's neat, one of those things that a lot of people do, but have no clue why they do it.
This came up and somebody tweeted us. It is tradition, but it's something that happened years and years and years ago, and somebody did explain that to us. But the removing of your hat during the anthem and standing, of course. Thanks for all the tweets. You can still weigh in at Jim Tolt Sports, at Troy Westwood, at Brandon _ Rewicki. And the Boss Pizza fan line is still open, 780-1290. More of your calls when we come back to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca. Still time to get a couple of your calls in. 780-1290 in the Boss Pizza fan line. Billy, you're on with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Go ahead.
Hey, boys. Long time no talk. You've been doing a great job all summer. So I've been listening to you guys, and I just keep feeling waves of disappointment about Trouba. So given Chipman... his background, being a St. Paul's boy, his Jesuit education, community values sort of imprinted, or at least trying to be imprinted upon the team. It seems like Scheifele and Trubar are like the antithesis of each other. Scheifele, probably, if you remember, declared, "I would play for free." And Truba seems like he wants to just play to get the big, 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 massive paycheck. So I want you guys to comment and also sort of link it in with Paul Maurice saying that he's gone to a lot of these seminars and tries to get into the millennials' heads. Do you think that these guys in the NHL are going to start creating more sophisticated, you know, psychological testing to know up front when you're interviewing these players that they actually would want to stay with your organization and that you're not going to get into this sort of Trouba, you know, kerfuffle?
I think things change for Jacob Trouba. I don't think he has a problem being here. I don't think he had a problem being drafted by this organization. I clearly don't think he's had an issue with the opportunity he was given, especially his rookie year to play in the National Hockey League. I just think that family stuff and has changed for him, and he wants to go back on the East Coast and be in the States. I don't think that it has anything to do with trying to deduct in interviewing process whether a guy is this way or that way or anything like that.
And I don't even necessarily think or know that it's East Coast, though, but let's throw a for instance up there. I don't think Trouba's a bad guy or anything in what's happening here. But if he's and the same with Michael Frolik, right? Some of the understanding I had was that when it's not like you're dealing. If you're dealing with single guys, that's a little bit different. But once loved ones come into play, and if you're involved with a lady, and for whatever reason she has a need, maybe it's scholastic or like academic, maybe it's family, something where she's got to be in the States for some reason. And if you can help to also be there and make things easier on the home front, you're going to make those types of decisions. Same way that you see, you know, guys with families are in, you know, it's not as simple, right? Making a decision as to where you're going to play or if you're willing to move, all those sorts of things that come into play. So Jacob Trouba and Mark Scheifele are darn good buddies. So, you know, thinking that they have a real different approach or mentality or understanding, that really wouldn't make sense, right? Think about the guys you've hung out with on a team. They're typically somewhat similar to your thinking and that sort of thing. I just think this is a personal situation for Jacob Trouba that if the things that I'm hearing do come to fruition, it's kind of not, you know, it's a shared decision that is being come to in that situation, not something solely on what he wants to do, but something he kind of has to do in a home front type situation.
And I think it's a little unfair to paint him in kind of a selfish light. Look, if I played in the NHL and I was on an American team, you'd bet your ass I'd be doing everything I could to head back up north. So like I don't think it's anything on Jacob Trouba and who he is as a person and whether or not, you know, that's something you look at in a negative light. I think if we as Canadians, if there was a player playing in the U.S. right now that wanted to come back up and play in Canada because that's where he grew up, you think anybody in Canada would look at that in a negative light? No, it's because you have the American wanted to go back home thing, and, you know, then you get into the whole small town Winnipeg where, you know, you get a little defensive when these sorts of things come up. When if the situation was flip-flopped, I don't think anybody would be putting any sort of a Canadian in a bad light.
Yeah, I don't think it's about the city of Winnipeg. And I don't think it's about the Winnipeg Jets. I think it's just about, you know, family, lifestyle. Not lifestyle, I shouldn't say that. Family and just, you know, being closer to what he wants to be closer to personally. Thanks for the call, Billy. We'll squeeze one more in before we have to go. Mike, you're on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Oh, we've lost Mike. Final point on that. These guys bring up good points. Like I think that family has changed and personal situation and that he just wants to be closer to home or closer for family and all that. So I don't think it's a Winnipeg thing. However, that being said, that's the thing that happens when you're a professional athlete. And that's the thing that's being tested is, you know, I'm a big-time NHL defenseman, and I'm going to try and get my way here.
And he's going to get his way.
You think so, eh?
Well, no matter what he gets his way, because worst-case scenario, he does his seven-year service beats the 27-year-old thing, right? So he plays for 7 years on the team that drafted him, and then he's out. He's in absolute control. If he wants to do that, he's got the ultimate card, and there's nothing nobody can do about it.
Interesting show today, for sure, as we creep closer to training camp starting on Saturday at Bell MTS Iceplex. Fan Fest, of course, underway then, too. The Big Show will be there doing our program live from 6 to 11 a.m. at Bell MTS Iceplex on Friday, and we'll continue to delve into some of the storylines around the Jets and training camp on tomorrow's broadcast. Hey, we have two tickets to the Manitoba Bisons, University of Manitoba Bisons homecoming football game this Saturday, 1 p.m. at Investors Group Field. The Bombers are on a bye. You can still see some great Canadian football action, though, Investors Group Field when they host the Calgary Dinosaurs for their annual homecoming game. 780-1290, 780-1290. The 12th caller through will get a pair of tickets to the Manitoba Bison homecoming football game this Saturday at 1 versus the U of C. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening. We'll be back on The Big Show tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.